Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, and it's Monday. Are you enjoying this music, Wendy?
I'm grooving to it.
Kevin told me first thing this morning. Well, first time, I mean, I'm sure he probably did other things in the morning, and I did too. But the first thing I heard from Kevin was, I'm going to play some music that I love, and this is it.
Who is this? Fade? Your band Fade with two A's?
No, this is too groovy for us. This is Richard in Your Head.
Richard in Your Head.
Anybody shorten his name ever?
Rich? Rich in Your Head?
Yes.
So we will be featuring the music of Richard in Your Head for the first few moments of the show.
That was very soothing.
Wasn't that nice?
Yeah.
I said to Kevin, that's the most vibrant music I've heard in a long time. Very vibrant.
I'm thinking more soothe.
Yeah. I just wanted to set the tone for the day.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
It worked.
How about that snow, man?
Beautiful.
Thank God I survived. I heard you killed me off on Friday.
Oh, my, Wendy's back.
Some people, yes, Steve, Wendy is back. Some people may have heard it as though I killed you off, but why would I do that?
You know, when you're gone, I say, oh, yeah, my little buddy's not here today.
Yeah.
I tune in with my kids and, yes, the late Wendy Snyder. I run late for things.
I don't think I said that.
But can I tell you, I'm not a prankster. I hate pranks, but I know you enjoy them very much. I was going to text you on my phone and say, Bill, this is Jimmy Mack. I had to cancel my trip because Wendy's been in a very bad accident.
Because
I just wanted
awful.
To make you feel terrible.
That would have been awful.
But then I thought if I did that, then I'm going to get in an accident.
Right. Yeah, because then you've jinxed yourself.
I know.
Why would you do that? You don't want to do that.
So you're okay?
Still late.
Right.
Actually, right. I was early today, but yeah, no, I don't care.
No.
You're into pranks, though. It was so hard for me not to do that to you, to text you.
I would have seen through that in a second. You know that, right? There's
no
way.
I don't know. I believe you used a prank with one of your daughters one time when you wanted to get out of something.
What was that? I don't know which one.
I think you said one of your daughters fell down the stairs or something when they were toddlers.
No, Terry called on April Fool's Day once a long time ago. She called me during the show and said that she had fallen down the stairs.
She's vicious.
Yeah. You don't use kids in a prank. That's where you draw the line.
She's worse than you.
Yeah, you got to draw the line there. Listen to this. This is what I saw on Lakeshore Drive today on my way in. And tell me how you would have reacted to this behavior. There's a guy in the extreme right lane. So on Lakeshore Drive, for those of you who have been on it, you have you have four lanes, right? So you have your extreme, I'm in a hurry lane, and then you have another lane for people who are in a hurry but aren't in that big of a hurry. Then you have the lane that I'm in, which is I'm all right, I have time. And then you have the lane for people getting on and off of Lakeshore Drive. In that lane, the extreme right-hand lane, there's a guy who keeps doing this. He keeps up with traffic for a while, and then he stops, and he closes his eyes as if to take a small nap. And he does that for about 15 seconds, and then he speeds up. And then after a while, he does the same thing. He stops, closes his eyes, tilts his head back.
Well, he is falling asleep.
He's taking a nap. But how weirdly regimented was his timing? Like, he knew, like, in his head is like, I know I don't have time for a full-on nap, but I'll just take 15-second interval naps, and that should get me through my ride to work. And I was scared out of my mind.
As you should be. He was falling asleep at the wheel. They say sleepy driving is worse than drunk driving.
I think it is.
Did you call the authorities?
No, I didn't know. At that point, my main concern was for
Stay
myself.
Stay away from
very
him.
Selfish, but very true. I'm like, where could I go on Lakeshore Drive that would be the furthest away? And that would be your extreme left-hand lane. But because of the way the traffic patterns were, I couldn't get over. I was relegated to being next to him for most of it.
Oh, my God.
And I saw him five different times, you know, because the way the traffic goes is you eventually catch up with the other lanes. And he did keep pace. You know, it's not like those naps took him out of the game. He timed
it. Was it Orion?
Like, oh.
Because he can nap in, like, 10-second intervals.
He does do that. That's not just a myth. He's talked about that at length.
I know.
He's trained himself to take little mini, mini, mini naps. But this guy was masterful. But I'm like, there's no way this is going to end well.
Here's what you do. And there are two theories on this. I like to stay behind them so I can keep my eye on them. And
That's
they're not going to rear end me.
Yes.
If the streets are kind of vacant, then you can speed past them and get past them.
Right.
But for the most part, I like to stay behind them so I can keep
an
my
eye
on them.
That's a smart move. Yeah. I was behind him for a while. I was in front of him. I was next to him for a while. I kept thinking, should I help him in some way? But he didn't seem to need help. He had it timed out beautifully.
Well, I don't think it was intentional.
I don't know if it was or not. But then, like, when he was awake, he was
fine. He's a
good
driver when he's awake.
Oh, was he good. But it was those 15-second intervals of sleep that disturbed me. And
yeah, but he was apparently pretty good sleeping, too.
He was. But then I'm thinking to myself, and there was enough time. I'm like, does he have a snooze alarm somewhere in his car that wakes him up every 15 seconds? Because one of those for me would be, I can't just do 15. I got to do 30. I got to do 45. I got to do a minute.
That's really frightening.
I know, all the way in. I watched him do it all the way in.
He's probably in a snowbank somewhere right now.
I wrote his, I don't know if I have it with me. I wrote his license plate number down. And then after I wrote it down, I go, what am I going to do with this? If there is an accident, they'll have his license plate. But I wrote it down, so if anyone needs it, have it.
See, I never know what to do in that situation. Do you call 311 and say, listen, I don't know what's going on, but I'm worried that this guy's going to hurt someone.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like to be a rat.
There's a masterful snoozer on the right-hand lane of Lakeshore Drive.
That's his rap name. M. Snooze, for short.
M. Snooze. Please help M. Snooze. I don't want any accidents. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got a full show. Wendy, wake up.
Oh, sorry.
One of the stars of Chicago Fire is this whole show is celebrating their 100th episode. So Joe Manosso, who's been with us in the past, very, very a great guy, fine actor. He'll be with us later to celebrate that. And then Eric Zorn later as well. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Richard in your mind, by the way, not in your head.
Oh.
Kevin misspoke. Mind, head.
Richard in your mind. All right. I just told you the story, and I do this because there's a caller on the line who wants to share a story with us. I just, on my way in on Lakeshore Drive, there was a driver to the extreme right of me who just kept...
How do you know his political thoughts?
By his bumper stickers.
Oh, okay. Good point.
It said, give Nixon a second chance. And I said, that guy should be in the extreme right lane. All right. So as I'm driving in, I noticed there's a car next to me. Driving at strange intervals where he'll pull over for 15 seconds, close his eyes, take a little mini nap, and then speed up after that 15 seconds. And he did that all the way. I was next to him for almost 25 minutes.
Oh,
he did it the whole
God.
Ride. Yeah.
Kudos to him for not crashing.
I don't know how he didn't crash or just remain asleep. How could you do that without just going, oh, this feels kind of nice?
Boy, that sucks, man. When you're that tired and you cannot keep your eyes open, you roll the window down, you crank the tunes,
yep.
You do whatever you can. At that point, you really do have to pull over.
You would think, but he didn't have time for that.
That's when you should do a snow angel face first to wake yourself up.
Right. True.
All right, Eric's on the line. Hello, Eric. Happy snow day.
Happy snow day, Bill and Wendy. I have to say my girlfriend is extremely highly strung to begin with. So as a gag, whenever we're driving back, you know, from someplace late at night, I pretend like I'm falling asleep at the wheel.
Oh, that's hysterical. How does that go over, Eric?
Yeah, she screams loud enough to shatter the windshield on the car.
Oh, no. And you've done this more than once?
What I'll do, I mean, she'll be in the passenger seat, naturally. So I'll close my right eye, and then I'll start, like, nodding my head up and down, but she doesn't get it because I still have my left eye open and I'm driving straight as an arrow. So she'll be like, Eric, oh my God! You know, and you
celebrity
know, so,
voice impersonated.
Yeah.
Listener voice yeah.
Listener voice impersonated.
You know what she should do to get back at you when you're making whoopee? She should pretend to fall asleep.
Bob Eubanks sent that in, by the way.
I know.
Or scream so loud that she shatters the windows.
Yes.
Yeah, good luck with that, Eric.
Yeah, thanks.
Have a great day.
You too.
You prankster.
I love that you went with making whoopee. Of all the options you had, you went with making whoopee.
I wanted to clean it up a little bit. Just don't wake me up, honey.
Right. Let me sleep. This
Somebody's
is my time.
Saying that sleep apnea, and I know what sleep apnea is. It's like when you're falling asleep at night, you're not getting proper oxygen to your brain, so your body wakes up many times throughout the night. But it's not supposed to have, you're not supposed
not
to be sleeping when you're driving.
No. And then there's always narcolepsy where you just fall asleep without rhyme or reason. You just doze off. How do those people get driver's licenses? They can't get a driver. Can you get a driver's license if you have narcolepsy? You can't, right?
Well, I don't. Do you have to declare it?
I would hope. I would hate to think they're issuing licenses to people who just doze off at any moment. That's frightening.
Somebody said that's drunk, not sleepy.
He did not look drunk to me. Now, I mean, I'm a car over, so right. I wasn't able to give him a full-on breathalyzer test. But he didn't have any of the symptoms other than that little bit where he'd fall asleep every once in a while. But he didn't look drunk. He just looked like, this is the way I do it when I'm tired and driving to work. Like, well, he had done, like this was a thing that he
routine.
Does. Yeah, if I'm tired, I'm going to take little naps, and then by the time I get to work, I'll be refreshed. That's the way he looked.
The same texter talking about sleep apnea says, but it actually affects you while you're driving as well. I've had it for years, and I used to fall asleep all the time.
Oh.
And how do you get a license? Do you have to declare narcolepsy?
I don't know the answer to that.
You just have to have a really short driving period with the instructor.
That's it. That's it.
Okay, we good here?
Right. We just got in the car 30 seconds ago. That's all I'm good for. Have you? You've never fallen asleep while driving, have you?
Yeah.
Have you? And it ended okay?
Yeah.
You're very lucky.
I know. Years ago, when I first started in radio and you'd be driving home after an overnight shift.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes, you know, you just get the, what do they call it? The white line fever or whatever. And yeah, it's pretty scary.
That's when
I pulled over and I was like,
oh,
okay,
smart.
I got to either sleep or do jumping jacks or do something.
So you pulled over, and then what got you back driving again? Did you just take a moment or two to yourself?
Honestly, the fear of knowing.
Yeah.
Because then your adrenaline's going.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, I could have killed myself or someone else.
Yeah.
And but they say if you're tired to pull over, it's just sometimes, you know, you got to get somewhere.
Right.
So your guy's doing the right thing. He's sleeping while he's getting there.
When I was in college, I had worked on a term paper almost all night. I think I had an hour or an hour and a half of sleep, and then I had to work the next morning. I was managing a video store, and on my way there, on 294, I was at a toll booth plaza waiting in line, and I remember all of a sudden just people honking, and it's like, wow, I started to doze off while I was pulled over. I mean, I was in line for the toll booth plaza, but I don't know how long I was out for. I just remember everybody honking, and I went, oh, man. I did fall asleep while waiting my turn in line.
I think it's when I started. Oh, I was still working early mornings. So I was driving in. It was early in the morning. And there was this dude in his car at a stop sign. And his foot was on the brake because the brake lights were on. And I'm behind him.
Yeah.
And I honked a little and nothing. So I backed up to pull around him, sound asleep with his foot on the brake. I called the police.
Oh, no.
And they were weird about approaching him because, you know, if he wakes up, then the foot comes off the brake.
Right.
So
what do they do then?
I kind of stood by. I pulled up ahead just to kind of watch what was going on.
Yeah.
And they were just kind of approaching the car and stepping back and approaching the car and stepping back in case the car moved. But he was sound asleep with his foot on the brake at a stop sign.
Yeah. Didn't Tony La Russa, not when he was a manager of the White Sox, but I think when he was the manager of the Cardinals, I'm almost positive, I'm like 95% sure he has an incident where he had fallen asleep while driving.
I don't remember that.
I'm almost positive.
Sometimes you're tired.
I know, but then if you're in one of those sometimes, you shouldn't be anywhere near a car.
Yeah, there's video on it on YouTube. Tony La Russa asleep at the wheel from 2007.
Oh, no.
So with the Cardinals then?
Yep.
He was
I remember this. He was awakened by Florida police. He was asleep in his rented car in the middle of an intersection.
That's how far he went from St. Louis to Florida.
I think there was a DUI involved in that.
You could manage the Cardinals in your sleep.
Right. They were an automatic team.
I mean,
they had pools back then.
Playoffs every year.
It was easy.
How about this? My dad fell asleep on the highway and got the front of his car caught under a semi. No major damage, but still scary. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Although you can get better gas mileage if the semi's pulling your car.
Sure. Listen to you. What a positive outlook.
That's what I got to be. Didn't I start out the year saying I was miss positivity?
That's what I said Friday. I was going to miss so much with you being gone.
We had to bring in two people, and together they weren't as positive as you are.
I was going to say, before I was so rudely interrupted, that I started the year being Miss Positivity.
You were.
Yeah, but that waned very quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, January 8th or 9th, I think. Yeah. You gave up on that. That's all right. All right, you have another chance coming soon.
Oh, yeah.
2017 will be the positive
year. Look at how quickly
this year
has gone.
Very fast. Yeah, just 12
months.
Didn't
your parents always tell you that? Oh, when you get older, or your grandparents mainly, they go, as you get older, Billy, you know, life is going to just snap by in an instant.
Didn't believe them.
Yeah, right.
They were right. Turned out they were right about that one.
It's 2017 already, right now, in that second.
Yeah. very soon. All right. A break, some news from Steve, then one of the stars of Chicago Fire, and then all kinds of things coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We have a return guest. It doesn't happen too often, Bill.
I think Joe may be the first person to ever do the show and say, yeah, I'll come back and do it again. Thank you for that, Joe.
Oh, my God. It took you long enough to invite me. I'll come back every week if you'll let me.
All right. We can work that out.
It has been a couple years.
It's been a few years. Joe Manosso is here. He plays Joe Cruz on Chicago Fire, which is celebrating their 100th episode, and that happens tomorrow night, right?
Indeed it does, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
That's an accomplishment, 100 episodes.
Oh, absolutely, especially in the landscape of television now. You know, it's like there's so much to watch and cable. Yeah, the fact that our fans have been as diligent and as devoted to us as they have been is really why we're here. And, you know, it's like it's every actor's dream to have a job. And one that lasts this long is like makes it that much sweeter.
You know what part of it is there are a lot of people in Chicago that find themselves on an episode of Chicago Fire or Chicago PD. You guys are really cool with extras and stuff.
Well, I mean, I don't. Why shouldn't we be?
I know.
It's like we're all human beings, you know. And I think, especially right now, it's a call to all of us to be a little bit more civil with one another.
How about it?
You know, luckily, like the guys that we work with, like our cast, you know, especially like kind of the patriarchs on our show, David, Christian, Eamon, they're just such open, lovely human beings, and I think that they've really led the way in terms of like how we interact with our fans and how we interact with each other, really. And I think that that's why, you know, we enjoy each other as much as we do.
Because there are people, you see numerous posts, some of them my friends, that will post something on Facebook and go, oh, just ran into somebody filming Chicago PD or Chicago Fire. And you guys all take the time to sign autographs and say hello.
If we have the time and we can. I mean, you know, think about it. Chicago, you know, on any given day in June could be 30 degrees. Like, it's like, you know, people are standing out there for, you know, 12 hours sometimes. Mm-hmm. And usually from a vantage point where they really don't get to see much of what's happening, you know, because of how we're shooting. So it's like, how do we not take a couple of minutes, you know, out of our day to just kind of take a couple of photos and say hi? I mean, these are the people keeping us in business after
all. Right. Absolutely. When you started this, you're from New York originally, Joe. So when you came to Chicago, did anyone give you any advice or tips to Chicagoize you a little bit more?
Tips. You know, no, I did. Well, the first time that when I was talking to a friend of mine in New York about moving to Chicago who happened to be from Chicago, I was like, I'm really nervous. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. Like, it's like, am I going to like it? And they were like, you know, it's exactly like New York, except it's a lot cleaner and the people are a lot nicer.
Oh.
I have to say, you know, especially the people are a lot nicer bit is so much truer than I could have anticipated.
Really?
There's a real sense of family and community and just kind of, there's a bond in this city that is unexplainable. And, you know, and in my experience, everybody that I've run into is just always willing to be that much nicer, you know, willing to extend a hand. And being somebody who's from New York, you know, I've said it numerous times, I think Chicago trumps New York.
Wow. How about that? But what did they say to you specifically to make you seem like you were a Chicago resident? Was there anything that...
Broaden my A's. Make them a little flatter, right? I think eat a lot of deep dish, right?
That's it? You like the deep dish?
I mean, I love deep dish. I don't necessarily consider it pizza. I think it's quiche. But
it is quiche-y.
It's delicious. I'll eat it all the time if I could.
I like New York-style pizza, but I don't even know if I know what that is. I like a thin crust, but New York is like, do you have to bend that triangular piece?
You don't have to. I don't think there's any rules to eating any kind of pizza, personally. I say go crazy, throw caution to the wind. But in my experience, folding the pizza in New York is definitely the way to go. There's just something about that grease kind of coagulating in the middle there once you fold it that it just makes it great.
It turns it into like a pizza taco. Like none of the goodness is going to drip out.
Kind of, you know? You don't want to lose out on all those juices. Those are essential. Essential oils that you're missing out on.
What happened, Joe, with Dick Wolf is your producer, and he's the one who's brought all the Chicago blank shows here to town.
Indeed.
So what is it about this city that he said, we really need to use it and make it look beautiful on television and just keep throwing more and more shows our way?
That's, well, you know, what I think is crazy is I don't think he works at making it look beautiful, you know? I think it looks beautiful on its own.
It does.
And I think what he's doing is taking advantage of the fact that it's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
And he said he's always... From my understanding, you know, he said he wanted to do New York, and he feels like he's done what he can do in New York, given 25 years of, you know, various law and orders. And he was like, I want to tackle Chicago next. He felt like this was a town that was underutilized and deserved an opportunity to be seen. And he's done so in spectacular fashion. Like, I mean, you know, here we are four shows in.
Yeah.
And I think it feels like, yeah, we're doing something that's never been done before on television. And it's really, really fascinating to be a part of it.
Joe Manosso's here from Chicago Fire. There's also Chicago PD, Chicago Med, Chicago Justice. When will there be Chicago Radio? That's what we're pitching you on.
You know what? I will accept that pitch. I will take it back to the folks at NBC because I think that there's legs to that. Mm-hmm. I actually, you know, I was talking. It seems to me the popular vote is for Chicago Streets and Sanitation. But
that'd be good.
I think that Chicago press or like Chicago media, I think that would be a really interesting thing to explore.
So not just radio, but newspapers and online and TV.
And television and just kind of, you know,
that's good.
A take on the perspectives of what we see as firefighters and police officers and how, you know, the media kind of takes that and how they deliver that to the people and the conversations that can be had about that, you know, I think it'd be really interesting.
Good idea.
It could be really fun to watch.
You know, it would be more interesting, Chicago politics.
Well, and that could be very much so wrapped into that.
I guess you could wrap it in there.
Except that nothing out of the ordinary really happens in Chicago politics, does it?
That's true. Yeah, it's kind of by the book kind of a place. Yeah.
That's too bad.
All right. So the 100th episode airs tomorrow night.
The debut of the 100th episode.
There you go.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a crossover coming up between what shows?
When we come back on January 3rd, there's going to be a crossover between Chicago Fire and Chicago PD. It's going to be, I mean, at this point, really, the crossover is every episode. Like, you know, we're seeing people from different shows on different shows every week.
I love that.
I do too. It's, you know, it's like, it's really has just kind of become one giant show. But it's going to be really fascinating. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on with Casey and Dawson and if they're going to finally be able to figure out all their legal problems, in terms of trying to adopt their foster child, Louie. And we get to kind of see Taylor do, I think, some of his best work.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some great stuff coming up and really emotional and really thought-provoking, and I think you guys are going to be in tune for some great stuff.
You had a little crossover last night with some of the Chicago shows at Whirly Ball.
Kind of, yeah. We had the second annual Whirly Cruise Cup at Whirly Ball, and we had representatives from all four casts there, we kind of battled it out for the annual Whirly Cruise Cup. Chicago Med took the prize this year after a double overtime sudden death match. Like, it was serious business. Like, we were actually, like, it's like the semifinal round was between Fire and PD, and that one went into like triple overtime.
Wow.
And the guys who were like running the whole thing were like, we kind of gotta get this thing moving. I was like, what do you want me to do, man? It's like the tie game. I can't help it. It's like tie game. What do you want? This is the action you want here.
Can't end in a tie.
Can't end in a tie. But Med took it this year, which I'm fine with, because as somebody who has to run this thing, I like it when the other cast win, because it keeps them coming back.
Oh,
more.
Smart move. Very
and
smart.
Is there a website where people can find out when the third annual is going to happen?
You know, when we do get the website up, it's usually an Eventbrite. It'll probably be Whirly Cruise Cup 3, you know, at eventbrite.com. But that'll come down the line. Like, we literally just wrap this one up, so we're going to
give it
sleep
some time
a little bit, and then we're going to plan the next one for next year.
Joe Manosso's here. He plays Joe Cruz on Chicago Fire tomorrow night, their 100th episode. Watch it on NBC. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder, along with Joe Manosso. Joe plays Joe Cruz on Chicago Fire tomorrow night at 9. You can watch their 100th episode. We were talking about the crossover episodes. There's a guy on Chicago PD, the guy who plays Hank, and his voice sounds like this.
Yes,
every
yes,
time
yes.
he
everybody's
talks,
got
it sounds
an impression.
Like
everybody, yeah, yeah, yeah.
How does he make his voice sound like that?
You know, I think my understanding is that he had like an accident years ago.
Did he
like,
really?
Yeah, in his youth, that kind of made that happen, and he says in some ways it's been the best thing that's ever happened to him because it's like given him a career.
So like, he talked like that when he was a kid.
Yeah, yeah. It's 5 years old. That's how
I like some Pixie Sticks.
Give me that purple crayon.
And some Laffy Taffy.
It's like Batman.
It is like Batman.
It's so intimidating, too. Like, he's got, it's like when you're working with him, and he's just looking you in the eye and he's giving you that raspy voice. You're like, oh my gosh. This is nerve wracking.
I'm glad he's a man. Because if he was a woman and spoke like that,
a little Kathleen Turner action, right? Like, it's like.
All right. Never miss an episode of Chicago Fire, says one texter right now.
Thank you.
Someone else has texted, how about Chicago Commuter as the next spinoff?
I think that sounds like an idea. Well, you know, here's the thing, right? Like, it's like we have so many people in like law enforcement and first responders off this show. Why not the people that we actually get to protect, you know, day in and day out? I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you'll find all sorts of characters on the CTA. So
Chicago Taylor, does that do anything for you?
I mean, if it means 20% off suits, absolutely.
Once you reach 100, like, you've got to, that means the show's going to be in syndication, right?
So they tell me. You know, I really don't know the ins and outs of that much. But
that's a lot of money for you, if that's the truth.
I think that's a lot of money for a lot of other people, really. Yeah, I don't know that I see much of that. But, yeah, the supposedly, yes, syndication, I guess, is down the line. They say, you know, the old wives' tale is 100 episodes means syndication. So who knows? Before we know, we may find ourselves, you know, on 5 days a week. Like,
oh,
would
that be nice?
I have no complaints.
Taylor Kinney, what?
Yes.
Did she hang out at all? Did you ever see her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we celebrated one of her birthday parties at my house. We throw parties at my place from time to time and get the cast together there. It's just a safe. And at midnight, it was her birthday. So, you know, we got some cupcakes and sang happy birthday. It was great.
How weird is that?
Insanely weird. Like, it's like, to be honest, I'm a kid who grew up, you know, in the Bronx, like, you know, lower middle class family. Mm-hmm. And like, this is worlds away from where I thought I would be.
And now you're hanging with Lady Gaga.
Yeah, it's, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. He keeps to himself very much. You know, his personal life is his personal life, and everything else is like he just focuses on getting the job done.
It's right. Hard to keep it your personal life though when you're on such a huge.
Well,
series.
And it definitely, you know, doesn't help that it's like they're in such a spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, and I wouldn't necessarily wish the kind of fame that Gaga has on anybody. Like, it's like I think it's hard to kind of just have a private moment sometimes.
Of course.
So yeah, it can be difficult.
Is that what you call her, Gaga?
Gaga.
Yeah.
Or lady.
Sure. Lady, m'lady.
She said the last straw. She said this is the last straw. She said the cupcakes at her birthday party were just substandard. She couldn't go out with them anymore.
Oh, well, if I'm the one that caused it, then I apologize, Taylor.
All right. If you could be, let's say you could be on another show, like you've done great on your show, but you got traded to another show, and not one of the Chicago shows, not one of the Dick Wolf shows, just any other show on TV, what show would you want to be traded to?
Oh, that's a really good one. There's a lot. I love Modern Family. I think that they do some fantastic stuff. I think they're one of the funniest shows on television. And if anything, This Is Us. This Is Us on the
air. Oh, my God. I just told Bill about that.
I'm obsessed with it.
Yes. I am, too. I did a binge last night of 6 episodes. I think I have 3 left.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. And you'll be caught up. Oh, wait. 6 episodes? Oh, what you are about to watch.
Oh, really?
Oh, the 7th episode is fantastic. I think it's the best show. It's so the best new show on television. I mean, it's like, I think Emmy-worthy acting, Emmy-worthy writing. They really, really beautiful work on that show.
Oh, good. All right.
And luckily enough, they precede Chicago Fire. So it's
doesn't
like,
that work nice?
Go watch This Is Us and then just stay tuned for Chicago Fire.
I love Mandy Moore, so that's really cool to see
and
her
she's
in
fantastic
there.
In it. She's so good in it. Like, it's like, I mean, everybody. They're all such
Milo
strong
Ventimiglia.
Actors.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, one of our successes, I think for them the same, is that they've really nailed down the family element. Like, they really understand what it is to kind of put a family on television. And I think that's why they're a perfect kind of lead-in to us.
Yeah.
Because we're very much so in the same hemisphere when it comes to that.
Be honest, don't you get kind of teary-eyed in several of those episodes?
I've cried for everyone.
I know. Bill, I told you that today.
Yeah.
Everyone.
It's very emotional.
Not that you like to cry, but you do cry.
Yeah,
Randy Flagler says the same thing. We talk about it like every Tuesday we come in. And they're like, we're sitting in the back of squad, you know, in our big firefighter gear. And we're like, oh my God, did you see that scene on This Is Us? So it was like just bawling our eyes out. It's hilarious.
How careful are they on Chicago Fire to make sure that whatever you guys do, whatever the firefighters do, is the way it would really happen? You must have.
Insanely careful. I mean, you know, our chief technical director is a retired chief from the Chicago Fire Department.
Oh, he is.
And he's there every day with us. And, you know, he's making sure that we do things. We received a lot of training out at the very beginning, and now the rest has really kind of just kind of become on the job training. But they're there every step of the way. We have an incredible team of special effects artists and stuntmen who take great care of us.
Sure.
And it's why I personally have no issues taking on whatever challenge they throw my way, because I know I'm in really good hands.
Yeah, good.
Do you have a good chili recipe you can share?
Unfortunately not. I actually feel kind of embarrassed that I don't.
That's the official food of firemen, if people don't know. That's what firemen.
And I went to a chili cook-off. Like, I went to this giant. I had to taste like 25 different types of chili.
Yeah.
After a while, it's like it all tastes the same.
Yeah.
I would say lots of cayenne pepper, lots of meat, lots of beans, right? Like that's the three ingredients that you need, I think, for some good chili.
Yeah. Is it always chili in a firehouse? Don't they have other like casseroles? Do you do casseroles?
You know, I've been to a couple of brunches actually that have been hosted by actual firefighters.
Really?
Like real early on when we first started, like the Chicago firefighter community, if you don't know, are some of the most open, lovely, inviting human beings you've ever had
Absolutely.
The experience of knowing. And we got invited to a bunch of different houses to come in and just have a meal.
Yeah.
You know, and we went to this brunch, and funny enough, quiche. There was this breakfast quiche that this one firefighter made, that I was like, what is this, man? This thing is incredible. It was like a huge pan, and I think I took down like half of that thing. It was so good. There's some good cooks in those firehouses.
I would think, yeah.
I believe it. Well, thank you. You do a great job. Joe Manoso, he plays Joe Cruz on Chicago Fire. Congratulations on 100 episodes. Hopefully that means bigger checks in the mailbox, because that is syndication pretty much.
Your lips to God's ears. Absolutely, yeah. I'll take it for sure.
We'll be watching. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for having
me, guys.
Happy holidays.
My pleasure. Happy holidays to you.
A quick break and then more show. I don't care what the white man say. Uh-huh. Santa Claus was black anyway. I don't care what the white man say. Santa Claus was black. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You can reach us at 312-981-7200. You can call us there, or you can text us there. There's all sorts of trouble there at the Mall of America in Minnesota. Because, as you would imagine...
Because our world is moving backwards.
Because our world is moving backwards. As you would imagine, this being the holiday season, the Mall of America would certainly put a Santa Claus there, center court, so that people could come out and tell Santa what they want for Christmas. That's the way it works, right? Well, this year, the Mall of America has decided to use a black Santa Claus. Larry Jefferson is a retired U.S. Army veteran. He lives in Irving, Texas, and he is Santa Claus. He's one of the Santa Clauses that they use at the Mall of America. And
by the way, if children are listening right now, maybe go get a juice box and a cookie.
Please. And put them on Wendy's tab.
Sure,
go ahead. Still drink tab? If you drink tab,
they still make it.
I know they do. All right. So the problem is, a lot of people are coming to the Mall of America so that their kids can tell Santa what they want to tell Santa. And they're confused by this. They don't know exactly how to handle this. How do they process the fact that Santa's helper at the Mall of America is African American? It's very confusing to people, and some of them are angry.
Is it the kids that are having issues? Because I'm betting it's the parents.
I would imagine it's a lot more the parents than the kids. Wouldn't you? You did. You said that. I can't imagine it being anything other than that.
Well, this has been touted as the first black Santa, and I don't believe that to be true.
I don't think it is.
That said...
Are they saying the first anywhere or at the Mall of America?
I thought I saw the headline.
I'd be shocked if he was the first black Santa Claus.
But here's my question to throw out there, and maybe because I'm a white person, this is why I'm thinking this way. But in my recollection of pictures of Santa Claus, he's always been a white dude.
Right.
So
not always, though. You've seen you've never seen a picture of a black Santa Claus? I have.
I mean, I can go Google it and see it now, but it's like, again, if there are any children listening, really go get some Nutella and I'll wait because I want to say something. It's like I'll beat around the bush a little bit.
All right.
So there's Saint Nicholas, who I've seen pictures of Saint Nicholas always being Caucasian. Jolly old Saint Nick.
Saint Nicholas, he is for most people that is a person who 100% actually existed. There was a Saint Nicholas, and he himself was Caucasian.
Okay,
right. But Santa Claus is more open to interpretation.
But jolly old Saint Nick, if based on that particular saint, it's a Caucasian. So I don't care, you know, if I'm going to a store and I don't care about any race. I really don't.
Yeah.
But so here's my question. So if Santa Claus is in Saint Nick, I kind of put them together, but maybe that's wrong.
Well, Santa Claus is inspired by Saint Nicholas. That's all right. The root of Santa Claus.
Who's a white guy?
Who is, yeah.
Here's my question, and I, honest to God, I really would like the answer to this, 312-981-7200. Does it, again, kids, just earmuffs for a minute. Does it
and Nutella. Kids, get some Nutella and some earmuffs and just sit by yourselves in a dark room for a few moments.
I guess here's what I'm asking. If you're an African American, a black person, 312-981-7200, have your black kids always gone to sit on a white Santa Claus's lap? And if now there's a different Santa Claus,
right,
does it ruin the belief? I have to be careful what I say. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think I do.
It's like, all right, you have Santa's reindeer. It's like if all of a sudden it was Santa's tortoises, would that change things up a bit?
You're worried about the myth itself being distorted.
If it's Santa's helper, that's fine. But if it's really Santa, I want to know if black kids have gone to sit on a white Santa's lap and now they're going, well, wait a minute, this is a brother Santa.
Right.
Does that wreck the legend of Santa Claus? That's what I'm asking.
I would think if you were a black family, you would say to yourself, why is it every time we take our kids to see Santa at a department store or a shopping center, why is Santa always depicted as white, I would imagine? Why isn't there more equality?
Why isn't there an Asian Santa Claus?
Why isn't there an Asian Santa Claus? An Indian Santa Claus? A Hispanic Santa Claus?
But maybe there have been in those other countries that I'm not in, so I don't know.
I would imagine there has been here in the United States, but without the fanfare of the Mall of America. The Mall of America is the largest shopping center in the country, so I think that's probably a bigger deal. But I would bet everything that there's parts of town here that have had Hispanic Santa Clauses or black Santa Clauses, just not with the fanfare that the Mall of America has, I would imagine.
Here's my other thing to explain it better. It's a look that Santa Claus has had. And again, I'm a white girl from the suburbs, so maybe it's just my vision of him. But in the classic pictures of him, it's been a Caucasian guy with a white beard and a heavy set man. So what if all of a sudden there's a brunette Santa with a goatee who's really skinny? Like
that would ruin it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it doesn't go according to the lore.
Right. And that image, by the way, you know, that's fueled by Coca-Cola. Like they had an
they
ad
really
campaign.
Did start that.
They were the ones. Yeah, they were kind of the ones. And I guess the story is they got it from the poem Night Before Christmas, where he's described in the most detail. So they had their artists at Coca-Cola draw up a guy that looked most like it was described in The Night Before Christmas.
His eyes twinkled?
A bit, yeah. Yeah.
Good to know. All right, that's all I'm asking. Does it ruin the myth, the man, the legend?
Mm-hmm.
Hi,
good
Lynn.
Question.
Hello?
Hi, Lynn.
Yes, hi. I'm almost 61. I grew up with a book called Turkey Trot by Kate Gamble Dyer. And little boy was black, and he got separated from his family. But the main point is, Santa is black for black children. He's Asian for Asian children. He's white for white children. And
so, who has mandated that? Like, who? So you're saying that if your family,
well,
if you haven't,
that's how I grew up believing.
Oh, okay.
And this book probably is not politically correct anymore.
Turkey Trot.
But Turkey Trot by Kate Gamble Dyer, and I got it in the late 50s. And I read it to my children, who are 18 now, and I cry every year when I read it to them.
Yeah.
And it's just a wonderful story. If anybody can point out the book to you, it's really good.
Excellent. I never heard of it until just now.
I wrote it down. Kate Gamble Dyer, Turkey Trot.
Dyer, Turkey Trot. Mm-hmm. All the children were named after Jules, and he was Turquoise, and it got shortened to Turkey. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful story.
All right. We'll try to find that. That sounds interesting.
All right. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Maybe we could have like little Christmas instrumental music, and you could gather everyone around the fireplace, a.k.a. the radio, and maybe you can do like a
reading from Turkey Trot?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
If it's okay to read on air, I'm afraid of some of the ideas that she just described might not be appropriate, maybe.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I just wanted to say, back in the 80s, we used to take, I have two sons, 31, 34. And when they were younger, you know, we used to go downtown, see the lights, and always go to Marshall Field to see Santa.
Sure.
And there was one year that there were, you know, and they always had two Santas because the lines were so long. So you'd either, wherever you were, you were next to go.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the Santas was black. We turned the corner. There was Santa. I looked at my husband. We kind of were surprised. Didn't say anything. It didn't faze the kids in the least. In the least. I had a picture of him.
I don't think kids see color, and certainly not now. I mean, which is awesome.
I don't either. And I'm glad.
Me too, Karen. So, and that was back in the 80s at Marshall Fields.
At Marshall Fields. And Karen, could you see, were there other families or parents that were, I don't know, that handled it different emotionally than you guys did?
You know, I didn't even pay any attention to that. I was just so excited for my kids to see Santa.
Right.
So I didn't really notice.
All right, good. Very good. Well, thank you. We appreciate the call. Have a good holiday.
You too.
All right.
I just, you know, if you say it's Santa's helper, then I don't really have an issue with it either. I really don't. It's just, to me, it's the myth, the legend of St. Nicholas, who was a Caucasian guy.
Part one, we were always told from the time I was two, we're going to see one of Santa's helpers. You can tell Santa's helper what you want for Christmas. He'll then relay that to Santa. That's how the system
worked. Your parents
worked.
Were very honest.
That's how it worked. Second of all, there have been other characters. I mean, you could look at, Hamilton is the hottest ticket on Broadway. Look at the casting they've done on Hamilton, both in New York and in Chicago. It's far from traditional. And there have been other characters like Dracula, who became Blackula in the 1970s. You know, I know that's a little bit different from Santa Claus, but it's what I'm saying is there have been characters that have been traditionally one race or something, and then for artistic purposes have become something else.
But there was also...
Did your mom take you to see Blackula when you were a little kid?
Yeah, I sat on his lap, and he bit my neck. Which,
just like the regular Dracula.
It didn't
There's
really
no
hurt.
Difference? No.
And then he gave me a gift for my travel. But there was a neighborhood production of something, and a girl wanted to try out for a guy part.
Yeah.
And, again, I don't have a problem with anything, but to me it's like, I guess it doesn't matter, but if you have a guy part in a musical, although that disputes it when I think of Peter Pan because it's always been played by a girl.
Right. Usually played by a girl. Sometimes a guy, but more times than not, it's Mary Martin or Kathy Rigby.
Floating in on her wings.
Or Judy Pilak. Did you see when she played Peter Pan at the Chicago Theater last year?
Can I tell you she would make the best Peter Pan?
She's so good. All right, what are your thoughts on this? The Mall of America is getting a lot of criticism for featuring a black Santa Claus this year. 312-981-7200. Give us a call or a text. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Hey, Santa.
All right, we're talking about the Mall of America, and there was a black Santa Claus. And I guess my question is, anyone can play a character differently. Like you mentioned Hamilton, and that right. was a great example. Peter Pan, a guy played by a girl frequently.
Yep.
But if kids are listening, time to go get
more Nutella
popsicle.
And a popsicle.
Boy,
and you said earmuffs.
Junk food to the kids. Right.
People call in, how come our kids are so fat now? They were listening to the show and now they're really heavy. Well, because Wendy keeps telling them to eat during
the show.
All right,
go have some turkey, some lean protein. So in a kid's eyes, I guess what I'm saying, Santa Claus is not a character. He's a real dude.
Sure.
So kids see him as a real person. If a kid sees that real person look different, does it ruin the magic of Christmas for them? That's exactly what I mean.
Okay, I see now. Good question.
All right. Let's talk to Santa's helper. Hi, John.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good.
Love your show. I always listen to you this time of day.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
My wife is Mongolian.
Yeah.
And I was telling your screener that they have a Christmas tradition that's kind of borrows a little bit from Russia, but their Santa Claus looks like a combination of what I call Chinggis Khan and Merlin the Magician.
Oh.
He wears blue, not red, has a big, you know, a hat, beard, everything like that, right?
Yeah.
So my wife produces these Mongolian cultural events, holiday events, that sort of thing. So we've always had the Mongolian Santa Claus for the kids. Well, last year I was asked if I would be the red-suited American Santa Claus.
A more traditional Santa Claus.
The more traditional Santa Claus.
Right?
I guess they scared the hell out of these kids.
Did he really?
Because they're so used to the blue and the Merlin, the magician kind of look. Is that correct, John?
<John's gone.
laughs> Did he hang up on himself?
I think he did, yeah.
Did someone edit him?
That makes it easier for us. If you, as callers, will just hang up on yourselves when you're done, that'd be better. And then what is the tradition like when both Santas show up in the same, do they have a sword fight? What do they do?
I don't know, but see, that goes to show you if the Mongolian kids think their Santa is different, then it, should remain that way all the time.
I guess.
I don't know what the right answer is. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know what I want to tell you? From the time my kids were little, I taught them to be colorblind because
good.
We're all good children.
Yes.
And if people practice that more, you know, it'd be a better world. And I'm going to hang up, too, because
right.
I got to go do my shopping. Bye-bye.
Bye,
Marilyn. Got to get us in before shopping. That's what you do.
That's the way to play it.
Someone is texting, all joking aside, if a kid saw a white Santa one year and then a black one the next, that's what I mean.
So not from any standpoint
in a belief.
Right.
That's
more
what
from
I'm saying.
A belief
yes.
center than any kind of racist slant. Although, if you look at there's several stories online covering this and all the tweets and texts, and some of the comments are just, it's like, was this from Mississippi in the 1940s? Where did this come from? People are so furious from a racist angle.
And that's the parents, because kids
right.
don't tweet.
Right.
They're on Instagram.
Right.
Doesn't anybody know that?
Of course. But I feel bad for this guy. They got this guy, Larry Jefferson. He's a retired U.S. Army vet. He looks the part. I mean, yeah, he's African-American, but he looks like what you'd want Santa to look like. He's a jolly guy, and he's got the great white beard, and he's got everything else. And you see kids on his lap just loving it.
Kids don't even know. Kids see
right.
the red suit. That's what they see.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
But a parent would be stupid to tell a child that all those guys in Santa suits are real Santas. They are Santa's helpers, so the real Santa can be their color. That's interesting,
that makes
too.
Sense, doesn't it?
And
that
again, seems coming from a white kid who grew up in the suburbs and I'm in America, that's the American tradition. As we heard from the caller who said in Mongolia, they have a Santa that looks like, isn't it Genghis Khan?
Yeah.
And Merlin.
That's when my brother and I were little, that's who my parents told us brought us Christmas presents was Genghis Khan. We believed it. All right. We'd leave cookies for Genghis Khan, some rice, just a little side of rice.
If you see someone in a red suit, that's all it should matter.
Right.
Just see red.
That's
and
it.
And then sit on their lap.
That's it. That's a good rule.
And there's going to be a lot of pervy men wearing red suits right now, all right?
Probably. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got news coming up in just a moment, and then after the news, Eric Zorn, the feisty columnist from your Chicago Tribune, joins us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN 312-981-7200 is our phone and text line. Eric Zorn will be by in just a moment or two. But first, Ryan, are you available for just a quick go-between?
Sure. All let's right. Let's go between.
All right.
Guys, we're on the air. Keep your go-betweens to break time, will you?
I'm very concerned about this food truck story.
Yeah.
Because we have a situation here where the food trucks pull up in Pioneer Court and two different food trucks a day, and it's been great. I would hate for that to go away. Are they in jeopardy of changing that?
No, no. This was a lawsuit. It's been battled for the last 4 years. There are two things. One thing, those food trucks have to have GPS monitoring devices monitored by the city on them. That's part of the restrictions.
To prove they are where they're supposed to be.
Well, yeah, that and you assume also kind of like the cabs, just to see not only that they're where they're supposed to be, but, you know, that they're registered and it's not just some guy slinging hot dogs out of the back of a minivan, right?
What
yeah.
about the tamale guy?
The tamale guy.
Yeah, what about the tamale guy?
But the other restriction, and this is kind of the key, is you cannot park one of those food trucks within 200 feet of an eating establishment. So that could be a fancy restaurant. That could be right. a Taco Bell. It doesn't matter, but you can't do it. So if you want to, you could go get yourself a big, long measuring tape and make sure that your lobster rolls are 200
feet. Yeah,
no, feet
the Happy Lobster is really the only thing we're worried about.
There's that one little restaurant around the corner from that NBC Five building, right? It's yeah. kind of right over there. So I assume they're 200 feet at all times.
I'm going to measure.
All right. All right.
As all long right. as it's over 200 feet.
Then we're okay. All right. Well, thanks, Ryan.
No problem.
Eric Zorn joins us. He, of course, very, very feisty. Do we have a theme song for Eric, Kevin? Or is, yeah.
Hi, Feistmeister.
Hey. I'm still waiting for my theme song.
It's coming.
Zorn, Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Do we have to sing his praises?
You're supposed to sing his
You're
praises.
You're supposed to. It's yeah. in my contract.
Yes. It says it clearly yeah, that all praises
the,
must be sung.
It's in the rider.
Yep.
If you speak the praises, then I have a, I could get into a snit. And
no, we don't
out,
want that. Nobody wants
out.
That. Eric, hard to believe, but the leaders of our state politically are at odds. This has never happened before.
It's never happened before. You know what's really interesting? We were talking around the table this morning at the editorial board, and it's less than a year now before the filing deadline for the primary for governor
mm-hmm.
in 2018. So we are already, you know, looking at this new political cycle. And so what's going on for those who are trying not to pay attention to this car crash that we have down in Springfield? And it's actually in Chicago, because that's where some of the meetings are taking place. We've gone since July of 2015 without a budget mm-hmm. in Illinois. Governor Rauner's been holding out for various, you know, pro-business, anti-union changes in laws and regulations and procedures before he'll talk about, you know, the taxes and spending involved in a budget. And the Democrats have been saying, no, we're not going to talk about these things until we get the budget, until we get a budget agreement. Then we'll talk about changes to workers' compensation, changes to the way property taxes are done, changes to, you know, term limits, very popular initiative, the way political districts are drawn, the way local labor contracts are done, all these kind of things that Governor Rauner wants. So we've been going round and round, and you know, we've been following this, and the Civic Federation estimates that this is costing Illinois $33 million a day, that we are spending $33 million a day more than we're taking in.
Holy moly.
And we've been operating on these buttons. So you say, well, how come everything hasn't fallen apart? Well, we've been operating on, first of all, we're getting further and further in debt, where we have like $10 billion, something like that right now in unpaid bills, and the projections, that just keeps going up and up to, you know, $20 billion. And these unpaid bills are to, you know, small, you know, service providers, government agencies, or agencies that serve government interests. These are things that we've contracted, the state has contracted for. So these are actually, you know, people who have to meet payroll. And so there's some, you know, pain is leaching out into the public. And right now we're looking at, like I say, it's
33
million less than a year, but it's less than a year until candidates are going to start filing. And we were already hearing stories and seeing stories in the paper. That there was one, I think it was this morning, maybe it was Sunday, talking about, well, is J.B. Pritzker, the wealthy Democrat, is he going to run? Is Chris Kennedy going to run? The merchandise mart, the the part of the Kennedy family. People are talking about who's going to run against Browner, and suddenly, you know, there's this kind of breeding period we have after elections where people are not thinking solely about the political implication of what they do, but we may not be in that. We may be so close now to the next political cycle that the Democrats don't want to give Rauner a victory. Rauner doesn't want to give the Democrats a victory. The governor has been coming out and saying, let's not be calling names. Let's not be, you know, having a lot of personal invective. But meanwhile, the Republican Party has just started a website called BossMadigan.com, and it's creating a target list, a hit list of state reps that they want to go after next time. Now, they went after a bunch of them this time, and they picked up 4 seats in the House. They picked up 2 seats in the Senate. Democrats still control both bodies with, you know, significant majorities. But, you know, Rauner spent a ton of money. Rauner and the wealthy Republicans who surround him spent a lot of money going after these people and painting Madigan as a crook. This is House Speaker Michael Madigan as a crook and someone who is sleazy and, you know, trying to muddy him up. Now they're coming out and saying, oh, no name calling. Let's be professional and let's have these negotiations take place in a
respectful
and professional environment. Now, you know, the problem with that is pretty obvious. I think what's happened is you've got these both sides are just don't like each other and they don't trust each other. And I talked to some leading Democrats last week about what's going on with the budget. And they're saying that, you know, Governor Rauner wants them to give in on. And right now his two big issues are term limits and he wants a property tax freeze. And we can talk about those are both very interesting proposals. He wants those before he'll agree to a stopgap budget, which is just how we're going to end up the rest of the year. Because we have a budget. We have a temporary stopgap budget that's keeping the state going until the new year. And then the balance of the fiscal year, which runs to July 1st, is not covered. We've run out of spending authority then. So they're going to have to go back to these, you know, court-ordered, court-mandated spending. And that's just a nightmare. And so, you know, you have this situation where these, you know, we've got this stalemate. And they're not moving forward, and you know, so nobody really knows what's going to break this. I tend to believe that you have to deal with that. The budget is a hard enough problem. It's a very difficult problem. How do you decide what the state wants to do, and how are you going to pay for it? Those are two really, really tough questions. And when you add something to that, as the governor wants to do, he wants to talk about term limits. He wants to talk about property taxes. He wants to talk about, you know, all these other issues. That just makes it much, much harder. And it's essentially, the way I look at it is Governor Rauner's holding these budget negotiations hostage to this process. So and every time I write about this, I get lots of mail from people telling me that Madigan is a terrible, terrible person and that I should be ashamed of myself.
True or false, Madigan keeps not showing up for meetings that are supposed to resolve the budget.
Keeps not showing up. No, they've been meeting. They met over the weekend.
He was there?
He was there, yeah. He did skip at least one meeting, one famously about a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
or maybe 10 days ago. So, yes, he is very, you know, I think that one of the problems is that Madigan is sort of a charmless fellow.
Yeah.
He doesn't do a lot of interviews. I don't know if you guys ever had him on here.
Because
we can't get him to come up to the editorial board. John Cullerton, the Senate president, comes up there. The governor comes up there. A lot of prominent politicians come up there. He won't. He thinks it's a waste of his time to talk to us. He's not.
But that in and of itself seems irresponsible. If you're an elected official, don't you kind of owe it to the people who have put you in office to answer to?
Yes, and every time, you know, I make that criticism of him, saying like, look, he should be making his case more rather than playing this inside game all the time,
right?
Because he is extremely unpopular. Governor Rauner's popularity numbers are low. Speaker Madigan's numbers are even lower, and I think that's partly because of his presentation is so off-putting. And I don't think that helps his cause. You make that case, though, and he'll say, well, you know, or his people will say he's been speaker for 31 of the last 33 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been House Speaker longer than anyone's ever been House Speaker in any state house in the country ever, which is pretty amazing. He's very, very good at playing this, you know, political game, protecting his members, protecting his flanks, making sure he doesn't vote for tax increases without getting Republicans on board. He's clever. He's a very, very good chess player.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that right now people don't want them playing chess. They want them to have solutions. They don't really care about Mike Madigan's majority. They care about, you know, actual solutions to actual problems for the citizens of Illinois. And that's
the stalemate.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We have more to discuss about this. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the phone line and the text line. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Eric Zorn from the Tribune on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune joins us right now, and we're talking about, hard to believe, but politicians in Illinois not quite seeing eye to eye on several different topics. We're talking about the battle between Bruce Rauner and Mike Madigan. I'm curious as to how a state operates for a year and a half without a budget. That seems impossible to me, and yet that's what's gone on here in Illinois.
Well, a lot of the spending has been ordered by the courts.
Yeah.
And some of it's just been by agreement that they fund things, special programs and so on. Because if they were just to allow the state to shut down,
yeah,
that would create the crisis that would force them all to come to some sort of agreement. But one of the problems is that things kind of are limping along, and it's like sort of the crisis is building. Our pension debt is going up and up, our outstanding bills are going up and up, and our bond rating goes down. And that sounds like nerdy talk, but when your state's bond rating goes down, it increases the cost of borrowing. Mm-hmm. So when you want to build roads and all those things that governments need to borrow money for, suddenly you're paying more to borrow that money. The other problem you have with this is that it's uncertain for businesses. And one thing, businesses will say that there are certain things they don't like about what's going on in Illinois. But what business owners tell me that they really don't like is uncertainty, that they need to make plans. They need to know what's going to happen in the coming year in terms of what kind of tax rates they're going to pay, the whole thing about businesses. You need some sort of certainty about what's going on.
So who determines the order by which, if you have a desk with a bunch of unpaid bills, you're the state of Illinois and you've got this desk with a pile of bills, is it the comptroller who decides the order?
Well, that's interesting.
By which?
Yes, the comptroller is the one who makes a lot of those decisions when you're coming to the discretionary bills that get paid. Who gets paid what? And if you remember Comptroller Munger, the Republican who took over for Judy Bartapinka after she died, Governor Rauner appointed her. She was just defeated. I believe Susana Mendoza, the Democrat, is going to be sworn in this week, I think. I'm not exactly sure what day, but anyway, she's going to be taking over. But what Munger did was that she said, okay, state lawmakers are now, your paychecks are going to be like low on my priority list. And I'm not sure exactly how she worked that out, but she essentially put off paying them for a long time. And at least one of them, my state rep, Jaime Andrade up on the northwest side, apparently went and had to drive for Uber to make his
really?
Make
that's
his,
not fair.
His payments. I don't have feel too sad for too many state reps. It's a part-time job, and it's paid pretty well. But some of them basically try to do it full-time. Others have, like Speaker Madigan, have other jobs as well. He's a big property tax lawyer. But your question is, does the state have a choice in the order that they pay these bills? And the answer is yes. And that's where it gets really important. I'm a little uneasy about trying to not pay the state lawmakers as a lever. Pat Quinn tried this, you might remember, a few years ago. He said, well, I'm not going to pay you guys until you come to a pension deal, I think is what he was holding out for. And the courts said, no, you can't do that. And I kind of agree with the courts. You don't want to have, it's essentially the opposite of a bribe, right? You're like, instead of mm-hmm. saying we're paying you, we're saying we're not going to pay you your money. We're not going to give you your paycheck until you come to a decision that we like. And Comptroller Munger was trying to bring the legislature under the heel of Rauner.
But couldn't you make the argument that they're not doing one of the primary objectives of their job,
yes.
which is to create? So you could say, look, you're getting paid to do a job and you're not doing that job.
Right. It's a good point. And of course, the governor, of course, he's not taking a paycheck. He's not doing his job either, which is, the budget process in Illinois, the Constitution says that the governor has to prepare a balanced budget and send it to the House.
Yeah.
And the House has to, tweaks it and sends it back. And then, it creates legislation out of it, creates
yep.
an appropriations bill out of it.
Yep.
Now, the governor hasn't done that. He hasn't sent over to them a balanced budget that doesn't have like a lot of smoke and mirrors in it. On the other hand, the General Assembly, the Democratic-controlled General Assembly, has sent back to Rauner appropriations bills, essentially a budget, back to him, that it's wildly out of balance as well. Neither side has done what they need to do. And everyone knows that we need to raise taxes, and everyone acknowledges we need to cut spending to bring this into balance. So we can get this. But no one wants to pay the price to be the one who said, you voted for a tax hike. Because they know that 5 minutes after they agree to this bill, then all of a sudden all the ads are going to be going out.
Sure,
you raised our taxes. You signed on to the Madigan tax hike. Are you okayed the Rauner tax hike?
Yeah.
I talked to Senate President Cullerton the night that Rauner won. It was Rauner had said, I want to cut I'm going to allow the state income tax hike to expire. It was at 5%. It was set by law to expire to 3.75.
Yeah.
And Carlton said, good, we'll let it expire, and then Rauner's going to have to own that tax hike. It'll be the Rauner tax hike. And I thought, that's an interesting idea. And in fact, you know, Rauner, they let it expire, and now no one wants to own the necessary tax hike. So it is a bad situation.
It is
and
a
again,
bad situation.
And again, the political calendar, which I didn't even think about that. It's less than a year until these candidates have to file. So
there's a lot of calls, Eric. Let's start out with Frank. Hi, Frank. It's us, Bill and Wendy, and then Eric Zorn is here as well from the Tribune. Did you have a comment you want to make?
Yeah. Hi, Bill, Wendy, Eric. Is it true that the state of Illinois, even though they are not paying out the money they owe to corporations and others who are due this money, that those people who are due money can go to one of two companies, one of which the partner in the company is a former Republican governor of the state, and they can get 90% of what they are owed, you know, just by asking for it. And then when the financing company gets their money back from the state pays them 7.5% interest.
Do we know if this is true?
Yeah, what Frank is describing is true. Yes, I don't know about the exact numbers, the percentages and the numbers, and I'm not sure who owns it. Whether it's a, you know, I have read about this. It's definitely true that there are these companies that will.
So it's like a credit union.
It is a credit union. It's a place that'll, you know, how you have credit collectors will buy debt. Essentially, they're buying the debt.
Oh.
And they say, we'll pay you 90% of what you're owed, and then we'll collect.
Unethical.
Then we'll collect all of it when the time comes to, plus the penalty.
Is that, and they're does making that seem money. Ethical to you?
Yes, it seems
does?
Ethical to me because it's a business transaction. These companies need their money, and
But if I'm still on, and I don't know, I can't tell, but
yes,
it's
you are.
I am. If I'm still on, it's totally unethical from a taxpayer's viewpoint. We are paying 7.5% more interest on money that could be paid out by the state. I own a business. I send in sales tax. I send in payroll tax on the due date. Where is that money going if it's not going to pay the bill?
Well, Frank, let me...
And if the money is sitting there, if the state can pay a finance company to pay 90% plus 7.5%, then it smells.
Well, it's
it really does.
Let me say
especially
this.
Since a Republican ex-governor is getting some of that money.
I agree that it smells. I agree that it's a ripoff, but I don't think it's unethical on the part of the company that's offering the deal that's making this deal. I just think, I mean, it is appalling that because this is money that ought to be going to those ultimately, but the state is not being able to pay their bills, and that's really what's appalling here.
Isn't it?
Frank, you're not on anymore, but thank you for calling.
Eric, you're not on anymore either, but read Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune. He does a fine job.
I'm going to pass it off to Steve Bertrand.
It's time to pass it off to Steve Bertrand. Thank you, Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. This is part two of our Monday show. We are reachable at 312-981-7200.
Who's the wacky trumpeter?
Well, that's Al Hurt. That is Al Hurt. Now this is this puts me in a strange position. During the break there, during the hour break, whilst listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand.
You didn't listen to a second of it.
I listened to some of it.
All right.
So
he's not listening right now.
I didn't hear it.
Okay.
So I was on the Facebook, on the computer, I'm on the Facebook, and I see a note that gets me very, very sad, but I don't know if I can be sad. Here's why. It explains that Van Williams has died. Van Williams was Britt Reed, who was the Green Hornet. He was Britt Reed and the Green Hornet on the TV show The Green Hornet.
Two different people?
Well, Britt Reed was that's his real persona, and then his alter ego when he went into crime-fighting mode was the Green Hornet.
Do you have an alter ego?
Yes. But it's a secret one that I cannot divulge at this
time. Maybe someday.
But when I fight crime, I also have an alter ego. I can't fight crime as me.
Because people will know.
People would recognize me.
And they wouldn't listen to you.
But when I put on a mask and a cape... And tights.
You always wear tights.
Boots. Then that's my alter ego. So it explains that Van Williams died on Monday, a week ago today. And then it talks about how people who have worked with him are posting tributes to him on their Facebook pages. There's an actress, Diane McBain, who he worked with for a while. So she is posted a bunch of pictures of them together. And then it says in the comments, why isn't anybody reporting on this? And they're not. It's not anywhere. I went to five different sources, and I know one of them is Wikipedia, so that one shouldn't count.
IMDb has him still alive.
IMDb is one of the sources I went to. They have him still alive. Everywhere I went, he's still fine. So I don't know whether or not, you know, I have fallen for these hoaxes in the past. And then other ones, like the kid who plays Webster, every 6 weeks there's some note that Webster has passed away. And he didn't. He's fine.
Okay, but those are people that everyone's heard of.
Right. Well, you know, people know the Green Hornet. He's popular with me.
A few people do.
Other people. And I've met him. I met Van Williams several years ago here in town. There was a thing called HeroCon that he appeared at. And can I tell you, this was the weirdest thing. Like, I went up and I met him. I talked to him. I had a picture autographed.
No one in line?
No, there were it was jam-packed with people. You can't believe how many people. Like, when my friend Mike and I went to this thing, and we're like, it's just going to be Van Williams and us. Who else is going to come to this thing?
Which is a great time to talk to him, right. You know?
Plenty of time to talk to him. So we go there, and there's hundreds of people to meet him, and then Frank Gorshin, who played the Riddler, was there. There were a couple of other people there. I can't remember.
Burt Ward was probably always there.
Burt Ward was not at this one, but he's usually at these things.
Adam West?
I don't think Adam West was that one, but I've seen him at other ones. Yeah. And I can't remember. There's a girl who played Lenora Case, his girlfriend on the show. And her name is Wendy something, I think. She was there. Anyway, so we talked to him, and he's really cool. And my friend Mike says, hey, do you think they'll ever make a Green Hornet movie? Now, since then, they have. They made a really bad movie with Seth Rogen. It was awful. Even Seth Rogen, I think, would admit that it was awful. But at the time, that was just a dream. Oh, someday they'll make a Green Hornet movie. So he said, yeah, there was just a story in USA Today a few days ago saying that there's some interest that Greg Kinnear is probably going to play the Green Hornet. And we're all like, oh, that'd be cool. So then he does a big question and answer with the room. There's like 500 people in the room. So he talks about his days as Green Hornet and what a great experience it was and how great it was to work with Bruce Lee. Nobody knew who Bruce Lee was when he got the job and everything like that. So then somebody goes, everybody at the end, it's a question and answer period. So somebody said, essentially my friend Mike's question, if they ever made a Green Hornet movie, would you be interested? And he goes, well, yeah, except that I'm in my late 50s now, so I couldn't play the Green Hornet, but Greg Kinnear would probably play him. They're talking to Greg Kinnear. And somebody asks some other question about Bruce Lee. Then somebody goes, what if they called you to play the Green Hornet in a movie? Would you play that? And he just looks over around and he goes, yeah, like I said a little while ago, I'm too old for it, but thanks for thinking of me. Then somebody else asks a question. Then somebody else says this. I heard they're making a Green Hornet movie. Did anybody call you to ask you if you wanted to reprise your role as the Green Hornet? So every other question was that same question. And like if I was him, I would have gone, did you guys hear the rest of this Q&A where I kept saying I'm too old to play the Green Hornet? But I would say six people in a half an hour asked that same question.
That's when he should pull a Shatner from SNL. Right. And said, you know, you guys right. Get out of here. Get right. A life.
Right. I know.
That's terrible.
I know. He handled it extremely well. Like, he didn't break bad on anybody. He just, you know, by the fifth or sixth time, he's like, okay, is that how it goes? All right. I'm still too old. I'm still not going to play the Green Hornet. It still looks like Greg Kinnear is going to play it, not me.
According to IMDb, I can't find this information now, but I read it before as I was searching for his death along with you.
Yeah.
That he gave Bruce Lee way more screen time because he knew that Kato was a more popular right. Character and he wanted the show to do well.
Right.
That's a good actor.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a good actor. He was a nice guy, real handsome guy. He was in his 80s, which is surprising because if you ever saw pictures of him. And I'm saying this past tense, and I don't mean to because he could very well still be alive. I'm hoping that's the case. I'm hoping Van Williams is still doing great. But my friend, and I'm reluctant to say his name in case he's wrong because this could discredit
him. He's not
wrong. I hope he's not. Should I say his name or should I not?
It's on Facebook, Bill.
Rick Goldschmidt, who writes all the Rankin and Bass books. These are all the books. We've had Rick on with us three or four times. All the books that are about all those great Christmas specials, those animated Rankin Bass yeah. Christmas specials. He's their archivist. So he
wouldn't be wrong. He wouldn't post something erroneously.
So. I don't think so.
And by the way, Wendy Wagner played the character Lenora Case.
Yeah, Wendy Wagner. That was her. She was beautiful.
Hello,
Are there
Bill.
Pictures of her?
No.
You should see. She's really pretty.
All women named Wendy
are beautiful.
This is a text for you. Hello, Bill. This might cheer you up. They're talking about rebooting the Green Hornet movie.
I wonder if Van Williams will play the Green Hornet in that movie. Is that from Greg Kinnear? Did he send that to us?
And Bill, do you remember who Britt Reed's ancestor was?
Yeah, that would be Dan Reed, who is the Lone Ranger. Did you know that?
I don't know if I'm proud of you or embarrassed for you.
You could be both.
God.
So the way the legend goes is that they created the character of the Lone Ranger, Ranger Dan Reed, in the 1930s, I think. And then later on, they picked up on it and made the Green Hornet his great-grandnephew. So same last name, same family lineage, but it's his great-grandnephew. Even I'm embarrassed for me at this point.
I guess I shouldn't have known that. You in disbelief and awe.
Thank you.
Aw, that kind of
but
awe.
But Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, is no relation to either one of those. And now a moment of silence, which may or may not have been earned by Van Williams. We still don't know.
I really feel bad about these people who kind of fall out of the limelight and they don't make the press.
Right. Every once in a while.
Because if he died Monday, we should have heard about it.
Yeah, I mean,
especially with the new movie that came out, it brought a resurgence. Don't you think that it's worth mentioning?
Yeah. The show was only on for a year, I think, in the 60s, year or two, maybe two at the most. So it didn't have a huge following, but
everyone's heard of it.
Yeah, you've heard of it. So that's what I'm saying. You'd think if this were true, I'm hoping it's not, that it would get a lot more press, right?
Well, if he's not dead yet, he will be
him in. All right, let's take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. Wendy, you said something last week that I spent a lot of time thinking about. You said sometimes it seems like our show is obsessed with death, and it's true. A lot of times we'll mention a celebrity or a situation where somebody has died, and that's why I introduced a new segment, People Who May Have Died. These are people who are not necessarily dead, but Van Williams is the first in a new segment where we mention people who may or may not no longer be with us.
I like it, because Abe Vigoda could have been featured in that segment every week until he actually died.
Right, and then never again.
Boy, that was going on for years, poor Abe Vigoda.
I know.
I was at a store recently, and our coat tree broke in our house. You know what a coat tree is, obviously.
I'm not sure I do know what a coat tree is.
It's a tall, about Steve Bertrand size height, wood or metal with different rungs on it that you hang your coats on it.
Right.
Well, ours broke. I don't know why or how. It toppled over.
Forever.
I know. I'm starting to realize
that.
So I had this. My sister gave me this great idea. Why don't you stagger a bunch of wrought iron hooks on the wall? And there's something about putting things up on the wall to create more room in the room because there's nothing on the floor then.
True.
Well, I haven't gotten the drill out and got them hung up at the moment. But anyway, I went to a little crafty store to buy these hooks, and I bought 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And 4
per person in your family. That seems equitable.
Yeah, because you might have people over.
Oh, yeah. You could
so for too. Extra coats.
But don't you do the coat orgy on the bed if you have people over?
Yes.
Isn't that fun? That's always fun.
Yeah, but then people start going up into your room to get the coat if they can't find you. So I thought, and you know, odd numbers are more visibly appealing. So I got 8 hooks, but I'm only going to hang 7. But at the craft store that I was at, there were 4 of them that were marked $3.99 and 4 of them that were marked $5.99.
Oh, I feel a math
problem.
Hold on.
No.
All right.
$3.99 and $4.99.
All right.
And I checked the SKU numbers, and they were exactly the same. And I said to the young man who was a clerk, he was honestly probably 18 years old.
Yeah.
Didn't give a care at all. And I said, listen, little problem here. Some of these are marked $3.99, and half of them are marked $4.99. Can I get them for the cheaper price?
Yeah.
And he said, no, I'm sorry. I said, why? Well, they're a different season. I said, they're a wrought iron hook. Different, I don't know.
They're the same color and size?
They're wrought iron, same color, same size, same SKU number.
Yeah.
But they got a new shipment, and evidently they raised the price on it. And I said, but it's advertised at $3.99.
Oh, if it's advertised, it's yours.
I mean, it's on the ticket, but then the other one said $4.99, and I said, well, I mean, I think you should give it to me. And he said, well, yeah, they're different shipments, different seasons. I'm sorry, we have to do it like this.
Is this when you did your speech like the lady at Michael's craft store?
No,
you just went on a 10-minute rant.
Are you doing this because I voted for Trump? That's right. What I said to him.
Should have. Good.
But I didn't. But anyway, I didn't. I was kind of in a hurry, and I didn't feel like dealing with it. But I felt like I could have won that had I asked
you
for a manager.
You could have easily have won that.
And then I figured, you know, four of them, it's going to be an extra $4. But it's the point of the thing that he should go, oh, yeah, that's wrong. We'll give it to you for the lower price.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it should be. So anyway, this is going on in Georgia. A woman's up at a grocery store, and she was at a Publix store. Robin McFadden is her name. She's in Johns Creek, Georgia. And Robin McFadden said to the clerk, you know, these items aren't ringing up the correct price. And she was trying to figure out how much she should need to pay to make up the difference. And she was kind of doing what I was doing, like, well, wait, that's not right. That's not the price.
Yeah.
And a man behind her kind of chimed in and said, how much does she owe in the difference? And he paid the bill, and it turned out it was Jeff Foxworthy.
Oh.
He was just waiting in line, probably in a hurry to get out of there, and there was some quibbling about the price, and he just wanted to move the line along, so he paid the difference. Isn't
this
that really
is
good?
All part of his new bit. You just might have been overcharged. This is a very popular bit. If the sign says one price and you pay another, you might have just been overcharged.
Well, that's pretty sweet.
It
and
is
he's very
nice
recognizable.
Of him.
And then the woman, Robin McFadden, she took a selfie with him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, good press is.
Did he charge her for that? That would have ruined the story.
Wouldn't that have been really
funny?
That
would be $10.
She says, the kids were restless, and look who was behind me. And then there's Jeff Foxworthy, and he paid for my order when I wasn't looking. And then she put, I love heart, Jeff Foxworthy.
Oh.
But now, love or heart, you don't need both of them.
No, that's an either-or situation.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I love heart, Jeff Foxworthy.
Now, it's funny you mentioned Jeff Foxworthy because we have not 100% finalized this deal, but it looks like he'll be joining us on the show sometime in the next few weeks. To pay our Christmas tabs. Go out and spend money and just hand it over to Jeff.
And just give him the bill.
I heard that you do this sort of thing for people during the holidays. If you could pick this up for me, I'd really appreciate it.
Am I the only one who still thinks he's pretty funny?
He is funny. And you know what? Back when I was doing stand-up, I worked with him twice.
Is he nice?
Incredibly nice man. Very, very nice guy. Yeah.
He started a whole thing.
He's written a couple of books. And one of the weeks I worked with him, his new book had just been published. And he gave me a book with an inscription that read something along the lines of, how in the world did you ever pick comedy as a career? I hope he was kidding. But just a really mean diatribe about how I was miscast as a comedian and then just signed it with love, Jeff Foxworthy.
Well, he's not that nice.
No, I thought that was real. No, it was all in fun, I'm hoping.
What was his second book called? You Might Be a Redneck Part 2?
I think he's got a couple of books with that theme. Yeah, well, that's been his calling. That's been his main bit for years and years and years.
It
He's
still
a very
works,
funny
though. Doesn't
yeah,
it?
That and the buffet.
And the buffet.
Old Country Buffet?
That's
John Panette.
That's John Panette.
Oh, he does a buffet, doesn't he? Corral.
Does he? Oh, I think he does do something like that.
I've never been to an OK Corral buffet, and I like buffets.
You gotta go. When he's in town, we'll find one.
He'll bring that, too.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. A break. Steve with the news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
One bourbon, one scotch. Don't forget that beer. Today is a special day, Bill.
It's the anniversary, the 83rd anniversary, Wendy, of the end of Prohibition.
And we're going to find out all about it. On the line with us right now, Dr. E.K. Prescott. You have been an educator for, what, almost 30 years, taught at the college level for the past 15 years. And you have written several books. And now we're going to talk about the 83rd anniversary of the end of Prohibition. How are you doing, Dr. Prescott?
Well, I'm warmer than you guys.
Yeah,
I'm in Arizona.
Oh, you got it made in the shade. We had like 6 to 8 inches here of snow.
It's cold here, Dr. Prescott, but it's a dry cold. We'll be fine. Don't you worry about us.
Hey, I lived in Wisconsin for 15 years, so.
You know cold.
I'm
you know
glad
cold
I'm
like.
Gone. Yep. Yes.
I can hear that in your voice with the Wisconsin. It kind of fit in perfectly. All right, amendments. I'm not very good with remembering all the amendments, but I know the 18th Amendment was one of the only amendments to be repealed in the entire U.S. history. Is that a fact?
Yes, that is true. Before and after the amendment, the appeal amendment was actually the 21st Amendment, and it was a constitutional amendment, which is the reason you had to repeal it. Unlike the laws with marijuana, which is a federal law, not an amendment, and it's given to the states. So basically, it was an amendment to curb drinking.
And some of the fallacies that were out there, for instance, too much alcohol could make you explode. These are one of the fallacies that actually led to the passing of the 18th Amendment, which prohibited the production, distribution, and sale of alcohol. Is that true?
Well, that's a myth. Yeah, actually, it was the temperance leagues, and there were several of them. And they combined together, and they were called organization was called DRY, go figure. Mm-hmm. And they thought, along with alcohol, you had ragtime and dancing and alcohol, and this is all satanic, you know. And
I call it fun. They may call it satanic.
I know. And it was going to corrupt the families, you know, and we're going to have a lot of crime. So the Anti-Saloon League, believe me or not, helped write the bill. And the bill is actually called the Volstead Act. And it became a law. Now, you got to remember here, you couldn't sell it, you couldn't make it, and you couldn't buy it. But you could drink it.
Well, how are you supposed to get it?
Well, it was all illegal, of course, but believe me, our ancestors were very savvy in their ways. And one of the ways was a prescription for liquor. And you would go to the doctor, and the doctor loved it this time because they were getting lots of patients. And for some bogus thing like tuberculosis. And you can actually see real prescriptions at this time on the web. You can find them. It costs way too much money. But you could get a prescription to get liquor.
So you would have to have a doctor
like
sign
marijuana.
Off. Similar to, well, yeah, I guess it is kind
like
of similar to
marijuana.
What's going on with medical marijuana. But you'd have to convince a doctor to somehow sign off on the fact that whatever ailment you have, liquor would clear it up, essentially, right?
Well, you didn't actually have to convince them.
Oh.
It was, you know, this is how you got it. You would go. It was a known practice. It wasn't you had to have the disease, okay?
Oh.
You just would go and get the prescription, and then you could go get liquor. The most kind of liquor that was drank then was gin, though there was rum and vodka and other things.
Yeah.
But how do you get it, even with a prescription, if no one's allowed to sell it?
Pharmacies would have it, right?
Yeah, it's a prescription. Pharmacies have it. You go, just like medical marijuana. You get a prescription from the doctor, and you go to the pharmacy, and you get it.
And what were the problems with alcohol being completely illegal? There were problems.
Oh, yes. One of the reasons it was repealed was because of the many problems, not to mention one of them being that it cost $11 billion for the government to try and track down all the criminals as well as the taxes that they lost. That was just one of them. Another one was the rise of crime. And, it, you know, right in Chicago, you have lots of mobs. And you have the Italian mob, the Irish mob, the Jewish mob, and gangs. And there were some very strong gangs, one called the Purple Gang out of Detroit. And that's where this all started. But after Prohibition, okay, alcohol was, you could drink it, no problem. So then they went to drugs and prostitution and the like.
Yeah.
All right. So medical marijuana is legal in some states, not all of them. But do you see it becoming legal in all of the states, even not for medical reasons, but for recreational use? Won't that eliminate some of the problems that alcohol when it was illegal had?
Yes, you're right on target with that. It's going to eventually be legalized state by state. Instead of a constitution amendment, it's a federal law by governments, I mean by states, and they can vote on it state by state. Where the amendment was repealed, the 21st Amendment, there were 38 states that ratified it. So it's just a different policy, a way in politics that you go through legalizing it. But it's just the same, almost the same type of experience that we went through in America through Prohibition. For example, you could make what they call bathtub gin at home, and you can grow marijuana at home. I mean, there's very many similarities.
Do you think, Dr. Prescott, that because we had Prohibition and it lasted 14 years, it went from 1919 to 1933, do you think the fact that it was a taboo thing to have, did that make it more attractive to American consumers, do you think?
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, when you can't have it,
you want more.
I want it.
Yeah.
And just the same with legal marijuana becomes a big thing now, you know. And so you want more. One of the things that happened with distributing illegally was the diluting of regular drinks, gin, vodka, with grain alcohol or methanol. And this killed people. We had an alcohol poisoning epidemic, especially in New York. And I don't think many people know about that. It was at epidemic proportions. You could go blind, have a heart attack, have kidney failure, coma, brain damage.
Why wouldn't they just water it down like, you know, some unnamed kids used to do when they used to maybe go into their parents' liquor cabinet and take some vodka and then put water in to make it look like it was full? Why didn't they use some just water?
Well, because the alcohol itself had to be replaced. And they used grain alcohol. Okay, it wasn't necessarily always gin or like for bathtub gin. Okay,
yeah,
you make it with grain alcohol and water and a little flavors. Okay? That stuff will kill you. And they sold it. Women made it at home. You know, it doesn't have any smell. And so alcohol drinks started being made with grain alcohol or methanol.
And somebody's butt was in that bathtub, I'll just have everybody know.
Whose? Do you know whose?
No.
You don't know who.
Well, you know what? Bathtub gin wasn't made in the bathtub, okay?
That was
silly
just a
name.
Phrase.
Kind of a crazy name.
Yeah.
No. It was made in a big bottle, okay?
Yeah.
And it only took about 3 hours, but it was too large to fit under the sink. So they took it to the bathtub and filled it with water in the bathtub.
Ah. How about that? Despite the name.
So there was no butt.
No, don't worry, Wendy. Butt-free alcohol. Dr. E.K. Prescott is our guest. She's written.
Are you drinking right now,
no,
doctor?
No, probably not.
No.
Not now.
I think he is. He's got a cold. He needs a prescription.
Dr. Prescott's book is The Ivy League Chronicles, Nine Squares. When we return, Dr. Prescott, Kevin, our producer, asked me a great question to ask you. He's too shy, but I'll relay that question. It's a great question. Stick around. We've got more ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Today, December 5th, marks the 83rd anniversary of the end of Prohibition, an era that had lasting impact on American society. The effects are still felt today, and on the line with us is Dr. Prescott, an educator, an author, and I don't know, is this someday you celebrate by tipping a cold one?
Oh, of course.
Or a couple?
Wine is my, I like wine.
Mm-hmm. Are you red or white?
Of course.
Red or white wine?
White, Zinfandel.
Good
white.
Choice. We have a list.
Chardonnay.
I'm a red wine drinker, actually.
Oh,
Bill,
yeah.
What about you both?
The wine spritzer, Wendy. Huge fan. Love the wine spritzer.
We have a caller who has a question for you, Dr. Prescott, and we'd like you to meet Rich. Rich, Dr. Prescott.
Oh, hi. Yeah, so those coins during Prohibition is Anheuser-Busch, one of their businesses to keep them open was they were selling yeast for baking purposes. But yeast, as we all know, is also used to make beer. And the funny thing is right on the packet, it said, warning, do not mix this yeast with the other ingredients for beer. Boil with water to this temperature. If you do, it'll create an intoxicating beverage. So basically, they say, here's the recipe for beer, but don't use it. I mean, the only way I could think of something in modern times is, you know how now there's restrictions on cold pills because you can make meth out of it?
Yeah.
It would be like buying cold pills and on the back of the cold pill saying, warning, don't crush this pill and mix it with all these other chemicals because if you do, you're going to make an illegal drug. It's like, okay, then maybe you shouldn't tell people how to do that right on the package. That's how we know people were making their own. Well, obviously we do, but it was a joke. I mean, they're saying, here's how you make your own booze, but don't do it.
And Dr. Prescott, do you know about that?
Yes, I do, but not as much information as he provided for me. That's real interesting. I'm going to look that up some more. I do know, however, actually I heard it on Fox News, that the Bush, Budweiser.
Anheuser-Busch?
Anheuser-Busch. After Prohibition, they were given the Clydesdales by someone to the Anheuser-Busch family. So that's how the Clydesdales became part of that.
Very interesting. Yeah. Rich, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. All right, here's a question. Our producer, Little Kevin, has this, but he's too embarrassed to ask, so I'll just ask. He wanted to know that without Prohibition would a guy like Al Capone have reached any prominence? He needed there to be Prohibition for him to be as popular and as important a figure as he was, right?
Oh, yes, because he was, became part of the crime family, and that's how Prohibition, that's how liquor was moved. But I'll give you a little side story on that. John Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy, and his father owned a lot of breweries and saloons in Boston before Prohibition. But at Prohibition, all of a sudden it's illegal to sell. So one of their companies moved to Canada, and it was called the Silk Hat Cocktail Company, of all things. And he would distribute or bring it over through Detroit. And Al Capone was one of the people that helped him move his liquor.
So was that a huge issue when John F. Kennedy decided to run for president, the fact that his dad had ties to Al Capone? Did that come up much?
Yeah,
I would think.
Well, one of the conspiracies, too, is that, it was a mob hit.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
It definitely is. All right, now, you've written this new book. It's called The Ivy League Chronicles, Nine Squares. How does all this fit into the book, Dr. Prescott, and the Prohibition end of it?
Well, thank you for asking.
Sure.
I am writing a series called The Ivy League Chronicles, and obviously it works with Ivy League schools. And it is set in New Haven, Connecticut. In downtown New Haven, Connecticut, there is a park, and it's divided up into nine squares, okay? There's a unique history to that park, though, and it's right next to Yale University. So the story setting is there, but the background history is 1920s, and it starts in 1923 during the summer, and ends, the first book ends with Harding dying on August 3rd. No one ever really knows how he died, but each book will take you then sequentially through the time period and have a mystery and fit with the things that happen in history.
Sounds good. Now, how about this really quick? I'm curious. The Roaring Twenties, when you think about the Roaring Twenties, you think about the city that we're in right now, Chicago. Was there any more city in America that was more defiant when it came to not having alcohol but finding a way to somehow get alcohol despite it being illegal than Chicago?
Oh, man. You had speakeasies pop up on every corner. You had the other thing that the restaurants did is cocktails became invented. So you could order a cocktail.
Yeah.
But it had gin, like the Bee's Knees had gin and honey and lemon juice in it, but you ordered a cocktail. You didn't order
liquor.
Right.
So,
right.
And it was a roaring town, Chicago.
And the story I always heard was the reason Chicago was like that was that the cops, for the most part, were kind of on the take, that for a couple of bucks, they'd look the other way and you could drink all you wanted.
That's one of the long-lasting outcomes, actually, of Prohibition, is this started this, I guess, evolution of cops being on the take.
Yeah.
And they do that with marijuana. So that was one of the outcomes of Prohibition. Yes. Could get away with a lot of things.
All right, we have another caller.
I even went to our... Oh, excuse me.
No, that's okay. Chris wanted to jump in with a comment. Hi, Chris. This is Dr. E.K. Prescott.
Hi, doctor. I just wanted to say that I was a nurse at St. Francis in Evanston, and we had a very frail old lady, and her doctor ordered her to have a beer every night. And they would call it in the medical, in our charting, spirits of fermente. And we would give her a beer every night.
And so the doctor ordered her a beer.
Uh-huh.
It's true. You know,
a beer, and they called it fermente.
Boy, getting the Latin usage in there.
Yes.
I'm going to call my beers that from now on. Honey, get me a cold spirits of fermente from the refrigerator, please.
Wink, wink, wink.
Chris, thank you so much. I did not know what...
The legal beer...
Go on.
The legal beer was called... It was called Near Beer, and they sold that. Near Beer had 1.05 alcohol.
So still enough to feel a little something, but not enough to get you drunk, right?
No, you'd have to drink a heck of a lot.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right, do you guys know what the term speakeasy comes from? Because I was curious when you mentioned that. Bill, you're nodding yes.
You had to be quiet so that people around you weren't onto the fact that you were there at a bar.
You're really smart, aren't you?
Well,
I'm sorry, I had no idea. It's an unlicensed saloon, dates back to 1889, and it from the origin of speak and easy, so-called from the practice of speaking quietly about such a place in public or when inside it so as not to alert the police or neighbors. And then the word gained wide currency in the United States during Prohibition.
Right, but usually cops were paid off, too. And the bartenders knew when they were coming, and when the raid came, they just kind of flipped everything over.
Everything seemed to be on the up and up. Yeah.
How fun.
Oh, brilliant. Sure.
It was like Batman, you know, the bookcase would turn around and there's a whole other room there.
Yeah. That's how it was.
That's right.
Well, Dr. Prescott, a great job, both with the history of Prohibition and with the new book. It's called The Ivy League Chronicles. The new one is called Nine Squares, and that's available now.
Yes, you can buy it on Amazon, and I do have a website or Facebook if anyone wants to continue the conversation. So it's just easier to Google me, E.K. Prescott, and you'll find more information than you ever wanted to know about me.
Excellent.
Raise the spirits of fermenti with me tonight, will you please?
That's a
yes.
I like that. I'm going to look that up.
It was so nice talking to you. You're a fun woman.
Thank you. And thank you for being such gracious host.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thanks, Dr. Prescott. All right, a quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy, Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, and you at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to add or subtract from the show, feel free to. You can call us or text us at that number. Madonna has made an interesting offer, Wendy, to Sean Penn. Remember, they were married for a little bit. They were crazy in love, remember?
I don't know that that's really true.
The married part's true.
Yeah, but I don't know if they were crazy in love.
Let's
they never,
stop it crazy then.
I mean, really, neither of them ever smiled.
Madonna every once in a while would come close
to smiling.
Sean
never.
Sean not as much, no, no. But they gave us the cinematic classic Shanghai Surprise.
Never saw it.
No one saw it.
Papa don't preach, Bill.
Nobody saw it. Madonna has said that she would, you know, she is currently single and he is currently single. So Madonna said that she would remarry Sean Penn, even though she admits that their marriage was not the best. She would consider remarrying Sean Penn if he gave her $150,000.
Has anyone asked Sean Penn about this? Because I don't think he's in the market for Madonna.
No. His last few girlfriends have been quite a bit younger than he.
Charlize.
He didn't marry. He dated Charlize Theron, who I think is 10 years old, younger or 12 years younger, which isn't dramatic. But then the girl that came after him was quite a bit younger than
him. Are you president of the Sean Penn dating fan club?
Not president, treasurer.
And then Robin Wright, he was married to for quite some time. Is she much younger than he is?
No, they're close in age. I think she's a couple years younger, but they're pretty close in age. And their daughter's an actress, too. She's pretty good. She's a very pretty girl, model and an actress. The 58-year-old, that's Madonna, the 58-year-old made an offer in front of an audience of stunned A-list celebrities. It takes a lot to stun your A-list celebrities, but this stunned them.
She's been stunning people a lot. Remember the crying, riding on a tricycle because she was trying to get custody of her son?
Yeah. Rocco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From what's his name?
Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
Yep.
You are president of the Madonna fan club, I guess.
I'm treasurer. Neil is president. He gets upset every time you mention that I'm the president because I'm the treasurer.
Well, she's had some depressive issues going on, and I feel bad for Madonna.
Her kids tend to want to put some distance between themselves and her. Have
Lourdes
you noticed that?
Too? I didn't know that.
Lourdes not as much as Rocco, but they don't seem as closely knit as you would imagine them to be.
I never really would have imagined them to be that close, but that's cute.
Well, thank you. Well, like I said, on Monday night, a room full of A-list celebrities at a charity gala or gala at the Rising Malawi. Wait, is that the name of the club or is that the charity? No, that's the charity name. Although that's a good name for a club. I would go to a club called the Rising Malawi. Madonna and Sean Penn, it says, put on quite a show with this benefit. Sean, who is now 56, was married to the pop music megastar between 1985 and 1989. I forgot that it was 4 years. In my head, it's a lot shorter, but I guess it was. It was 4 years. Was quick to accept his ex's hand, and the pair later put on a bonkers display on stage.
What does that mean? A soft shoe?
I know what bonkers means, but...
Yeah, but I need more deets on that.
Here it comes.
I mean, making out?
Well, at one point, the milk actor, and that's the movie Milk, not the beverage, was seen crawling. It's almost the same. Was crawling between her legs and then handcuffing himself to her, which was pretty much the 4 years they were married. What I just described to you, they did that for 4 years.
I bet that killed on stage. I mean, you're sitting there. You're an A-lister.
It would have stunned me. I think they were accurate. If I was an A-list celebrity and I saw this, stunned would have been the exact way to describe my emotion.
What
during
the
this.
Heck is going on
what
on
is
that
this?
Stage?
Why are they doing this? I would scream. Madonna then said that the many moments... what does this mean? The many moments that were our marriage. Okay, so she was describing what I just described, and it's true. That's kind of what their marriage
she's
was.
She's stealing your material.
She's ripping me off. She later turned to her former beau and announced, "I am still in love with you." Oops. That's
embarrassing.
That's opening the door. The pair seemed to have timed the bit perfectly to coincide with an auction of previously unseen photos of their wedding day.
Who, they never saw them?
I think they saw them.
Oh.
I don't think the stunned A-listers saw them. But at that point, they were so stunned, they couldn't even bid on the photos. They were so stunned. Throughout the evening, a host of A-listers, they keep mentioning A-listers, but they don't mention their names, donated memorabilia, works of art, and one-off experiences to sell to the highest bidder. She billed the night as an evening of art, music, and mischief. Madonna danced away to celebrate her 58th birthday in Cuba. 15th. That didn't seem right. Emily Middlemass reveals that she and Ryan Lowry will marry. That happened at the event.
Who are these people?
A-listers.
No, they're not.
I don't know who they are. And then Simon Cowell invited everybody to the big wedding. If the wedding took place again, they would they would get an invite from Simon Cowell.
Can I tell you, when I hear stories like this, I hate Hollywood even more. I really do.
It seems like it's them against us sometimes. Like it's all these big Hollywood types. Although, with all due respect to Simon Cowell, I'm not positive he's an A-lister, is he?
He's not an A-lister. He's a cousin of an A-lister. That's why he's there.
And I know for a fact that Emily Middlemass and Ryan Lowry aren't A-listers. Because I have I've never heard of either one of them.
And you're on top of all this.
I'm on
stuff.
Top. I'm the treasurer for the fan club. It was during the bidding war of one of her old necklaces, Madonna's, that she decided to pick on her ex and then make a declaration of love. Unfortunately, despite being willing to pay the money, he was eventually outbid by other party guests. James Corden, you know who that is, right?
He's the
late
karaoke.
Night host. Yeah, he does late night karaoke. Hosted the grand event, which, according to The Guardian, the newspaper, participants had to fork out $5,000 just to get a seat at the table. Well, that's a lot of money.
Well, although, they're A-listers.
They
can afford it.
I'll tell you what. If I'm Emily Middlemass and Ryan Lowry and I don't have that kind of money on me, I demand to be downgraded to B-list that moment.
What are their names?
Emily Middlemass. M-A-D-D-L-E-M-A-S, Middlemass, and Ryan Lowry. If you gave me the 5,000 that I just mentioned to tell me who those people, I would have no idea.
She's on X. They're on X Factor.
Are they? But are they A-listers?
No.
I don't think they are. Even James Corden, who's incredibly, to me, that's still not A-list.
Clooney is A-list.
Clooney's A-list. His name's not in the story.
Oh, Emily Middlemass and Ryan Lowry are married. And Simon Cowell will be the guest of honor.
Oh.
So just, these aren't A-listers. This is Simon Cowell's A-list.
Right.
Like his buddies.
Although I would put Sean Penn and Madonna on if somebody said, quick, drop a A-list celebrity. I would go, yeah, I could put them on there. You don't think so?
A-minus.
He was in Falcon and the Snowman, Wendy.
How many years ago was that?
A long time ago.
A-minus.
Madonna later performed with pop princess Ariana Grande, A-list.
I guess.
Not for long, but currently A-list, right?
She doesn't deserve to be on the A-list.
What list? What other list would you put Ariana Grande on?
These are B-listers. Come on. You got your Clooney, your Matt Damon, your J-Lo. Those
Tom
are
A-list. Cruise.
Yeah, that's A-list.
Vicki Lawrence.
Don't make me say it. Please don't make me say it.
You don't think Vicki Lawrence is an A-lister? Come on.
I don't even think she's a B-list.
Artie Johnson?
F-list. Artie
That hurts.
Not saying I don't think he's funny and appreciate his humor. Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's fine. I heard Van Johnson died.
No, right. Van Dust. Williamson.
No, Van Johnson.
What about Van Heflin?
That's old news.
Van Halen?
They're all gone. All the
Van
greats.
Morrison?
They're all gone. Bobby Van?
Martha and the Vandellas.
They're all right. They're doing fine. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll re-up our prescriptions and then return for more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I do have a text that I'd like to share.
Sure.
630 says, Henry Winkler. We were talking about A-list and B-list.
Yeah.
Henry Winkler, A-list.
I like that. That's great.
Thanks, Scott from Lockport. Someone else wants a transcript of this hour of the show.
No.
For what, legal purposes? No.
There's no proof that this show ever existed. All right. How about this?
We got an app.
How about, listen to this, Wendy. Are you sitting down? You're, of course, familiar with the Barbie doll. The Barbie doll is America's number one selling doll of all time. They invented it in prehistoric times, and it's still being made today.
The original Barbie looked very prehistoric.
A little stiff.
Honestly.
Yeah.
You know, with the winged eyeliner and the hair that was pulled back, the black and white striped bathing suit.
Yeah.
Very attractive, but very dated.
Yeah. But then they've updated Barbie from time to time.
Now she does not look real to me.
No, for years she's not looked real. Very plasticky. Well, they've decided to make a movie about Barbie. There's going to be a Barbie movie. And that's a good idea. I'm shocked that it's taken this long. Why wouldn't you make a Barbie movie?
Good point.
Right?
Not that I'd see it, but it does make sense.
It's a great storyline. Yep. She lives in a dream house. She drives a Starvet. She's dating Ken. She's got Skipper as a friend. I know a lot about Barbie, don't I? I just realized.
That's a great storyline.
Well, but you could update it. Like, you could make, well, they did. That's what they're going to do is they're going to kind of update it. And they've chosen an actress to play Barbie. And now people are going nuts.
Raggedy Ann?
It's not going to be Raggedy Ann, Steve. That would make me go nuts.
I know. I don't even know why I had to have a Raggedy Ann doll. It was really dumb. I was Raggedy Ann for Halloween one year.
Do you have pictures of that? Could you bring pictures in of that?
Maybe my sister does.
I'd like to see what that looked like.
Oh, I looked fantastic.
Did you look like Raggedy Ann?
Yeah.
They're not making a Raggedy Ann movie because only your sister would see that.
But and Steve Bertrand.
And Steve Bertrand might stop in for a minute. But they have cast Barbie, and the casting has just got people nuts. Even A-listers are upset about this. Amy Schumer will play Barbie. Now, to me, that's a good idea.
Yeah, why are people upset?
Because they say that Amy Schumer, and it's true, I'll explain. They say that Amy Schumer does not embody, and put that in italics, what Barbie looks like.
Fake?
Well, not just fake, but Barbie has dimensions.
Like that woman who you've seen on the internet who wanted to look like the human Barbie.
Yeah.
I think she was doing it just to get the role in this movie.
Maybe.
Because, like, she had some of her ribs removed, so her waist would be tiny, like the Barbie doll.
You couldn't have, realistically, you could not have the dimensions that Barbie has.
Unless you get a rib or two removed.
You'd have to have your ribs removed. And even then, you'd tip over. There's no way.
This woman, you've seen her. She looks like she would tip over.
Yeah, she had herself look like Barbie.
But so what? Amy Schumer does not fit the mold of the 38 to 34?
Yeah, that's it. Well, so people are upset. The internet, here's a story from therap.com. The internet is once again exploding with negativity, this time criticizing Amy Schumer's potential casting. And again, I want to stress potential because they've not 100% announced this fully yet, but people close to the project say it's going to be Amy Schumer. This for a live-action Barbie film coming from Sony Pictures. If Barbie became obese and heinous to men, then Amy Schumer is perfect, tweeted one user. Barbie, ? Better lose a lot of weight for that role, tweeted another. How mean.
I thought they changed the Barbie so Barbie has more realistic dimensions now.
Well, realistic by...
maybe slightly realistic, but still not... You know, every couple of years, there'll be a toy company that'll put out an alternative to Barbie, not called Barbie, of course, because it's not Mattel, but they'll say, we want our daughters to have a more realistic vision of what women look like, so here is our doll that's similar, and those companies always go belly up in a year, because nobody buys them.
Flat belly up.
That doesn't make sense to me, because obviously Barbie has to sanction this movie, right?
Yeah, Mattel does, yeah.
Okay, and, well, yeah, right. Or Ken, one of the two.
Right.
And so one of the raps on Barbie is that she doesn't look like a regular person.
Right.
And they've approved a woman who doesn't look like a Barbie to play Barbie. I mean, it just seems like it's going to draw attention to the controversy.
All right, but the storyline is that Barbie is now older, maybe separated from Ken, maybe her life didn't go, you know, Barbie in doll form has been an astronaut and a TV reporter and stuff like that. So maybe her life has gone a little
different.
That's
not realistic.
No, it's not realistic at all.
But they made a new curvy Barbie and
Mattel did.
Yes. Yeah. So isn't that what they're trying to prove with this movie with Amy Schumer being in it? And excuse me, Amy Schumer is certainly not obese.
No, no, not by any stretch. No.
She's not even that heavy to me.
But she has talked about how with her last movie, the movie company kept saying to her, we really need you to drop a couple more pounds. We really want you to look sexy and appealing, and you really need to drop a couple more.
You can't look sexy and appealing when you have a little extra weight on
you? Of course you can.
And did she lose the weight?
She did.
But then now she's
put a bit of it back on, apparently. Yeah. But she has talked about the battle she's had with Hollywood, who keeps saying to her, if you want to be a leading lady in movies, we'd be thrilled to have you, but you got to work out a little bit more, you got to drop a couple. And
yeah, but talk to Melissa McCarthy about that, who was doing very well in her heavy self and has dropped a lot of weight now.
Yeah.
But I mean, she had roles before the roles were gone.
Right. By roles, you mean parts.
Wait a minute, what?
Parts, you mean parts.
She did. She had movie parts.
I know, I couldn't figure out what you were saying, though.
No, before she lost weight, she had.
Right,
she
right.
definitely was very successful in the movie business and the Mike and Molly.
Yes, agreed.
So she decided to lose weight her own.
Gilmore Girls, since they're
hot. Yeah, she had a part in Gilmore Girls. Right.
But Amy Schumer is, I think she's kind of a perfect fit for the Barbie.
I do, too. Actually, I would have little to no interest in seeing a movie about a Barbie doll unless it was somebody I liked, like Amy Schumer. And then I go, I'll watch that.
Because Barbie's not that funny, in my opinion. So this
not
is
really.
Going to be like a funny Barbie.
Yeah.
What I don't get, because Mattel's got to be in charge of it. And I don't see how she makes a movie without making fun of Barbie.
Yeah,
you know
that
what I
would
mean?
Be the film. That would be your storyline right there. is ripping on the fact that her life has taken some turns.
But would Mattel
go for that?
Yeah, I agree with Bertrand.
Yeah, yeah, that's the issue, I guess.
Something doesn't add up.
Something's not adding up. All right, we'll take a quick break and then some news. Steve has the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Well, you look out the window. Thank you, Steve. And it looks like it didn't even snow yesterday.
Yeah, there's not much here downtown. There's not much to let us know how much snow we had. But I think it depends on where you were, right?
Romeoville had 8.1 inches. That's
not
a
bad.
Lot of snow.
Yeah. And a lot was made of it yesterday because it was our first real snow. And a lot of times you'll get, you know, just little samplings of it throughout November, sometimes as early as October, but certainly by November, but not this year.
Up north, Waukegan and Lincolnwood only had a little over 2 inches. And then Oak Park had 5. And then People, Lake Zurich, Lockport, Sugar Grove, 6. And then the big winner was Romeoville at 8.1 inches.
That's a lot.
It fell very quickly. Mm-hmm. And
really pretty.
It was really pretty, wasn't it?
Yeah. I liked it. I'm good with it. Let it snow all through December.
All through?
Yeah. It just, I don't know. It just, in my head, that's the way December looks, filled with snow, you know. But then once I get into January and February, no thanks.
I mean, really, look on the street. There's just a few little piles, which, you know, I knew it would, it got on the streets and everything yesterday, but it really was that heavy snow that sticks to the trees and all your branches. Some of the trees don't even, they haven't even lost their leaves yet because it was so warm. So the trees were confused.
Right.
It's like they're covered in snow and there's still leaves buried in it. It was very weird.
Yeah.
But very pretty.
Oh, yeah.
It's walking in a winter wonderland. And you know why? Because Christmas is on its way. And BuzzFeed has put together a list of gift ideas because sometimes you don't know what to get a coworker, like Steve Bertrand, for instance.
He's hard to shop for.
How about a pair of fleece unicorn slippers?
I got him those last year, so I wouldn't do 2 years in a row.
All right. I haven't gotten your present yet, so maybe some of these ideas.
You should hop on it because it's, you know, you're 20 days out. Don't wait till the last minute.
I always wait till the last minute.
All right.
A bubble wrap calendar, and you pop off every day. And I
speak for yourself, Wendy.
You pop the. Is this the part of the day where you feel like you've earned it and you can go home? You just laugh at yourself.
No, I'm laughing at society.
You love bubble wrap. I love bubble wrap.
Who doesn't?
It's each day you will get in and pop the bubble of the day it is.
It's impossible if you buy something and they send you bubble wrap, even though we're adults, it's impossible
to
not pop it and enjoy doing it.
If I got this for the office, we would all fight over who does the popping off that day.
No, that's true.
All right, well, it's a bubble wrap calendar, $27.
That seems slightly higher than I would pay, but not dramatically.
It's not that bad.
It's not terrible.
Uncommon Goods.
Yeah.
Some of these are really stupid, like a bath bomb.
What is that? You just put it in the bathtub and it has an aroma that it gives off?
It fizzes like you're in a human Alka-Seltzer, kind of.
They're great.
I wouldn't mind that. That would be all right.
Kevin, they're great. Do you do bath bombs frequently?
No, I've used one.
Yeah.
Well, this looks like the world.
It's shaped like the globe of it's the world.
Color-wise, we should get that for Lucianne Wachowicz. Why do you always schedule her when I'm not here?
I don't know.
I feel like that'd be a strange gift to give her, though. That's kind of weird.
Well, she's...
I'm sure she would appreciate it. I would get her that.
Astronomer?
Yeah.
I think it would be good. Maybe the moon would be better.
All right.
Anybody a Bob's Burger?
Yeah, the TV show Bob's Burger on Fox.
A cookbook with some of the burgers mentioned in Bob's Burgers. Real recipes for joke burgers. Who would do that?
I don't know.
Even if you're a fan of the show.
Yeah.
This is a great idea, although you have to be a tea drinker. It's a contraption that wakes you up in the morning and brews a fresh cup of tea at your bedside for you to sit up and drink immediately.
If I liked tea, that would be the perfect gift. Because I didn't know they had such a thing. I like that. Is that expensive?
$79.99 from Amazon.
So it brews the tea as you wake up. How does that work again?
Well, yeah, you'd have to. It's like,
so it times itself. It knows you're going to get up at 7 a.m. So
you set the timer.
At 6:45. it starts making it, and then when you wake up, it's ready for you. It's right there at your bedside.
I'll bet you, like, if you set your alarm for 7, that's when it happens. The hot water.
You don't think it starts a few minutes prior so that it's ready when you're up? That's the way I'd set it.
So, see, that reminds me of The Office when Michael sets the timer on his George Foreman grill right at the foot of his bed.
Right.
And steps on it on accident.
Right.
What if you accidentally splashed hot steaming tea on yourself waking up?
But see, here's, like, for our coffee pot,
yeah.
I have it scheduled to go off at 6:15 because I wake up at 6:30.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't set two different things. It just starts brewing at 6:15.
Right.
So when my alarm goes off at 6:30, I smell the coffee, and it's like, oh, it's already made.
Yeah.
So I don't, I mean, unless you set two alarms.
No, you would just, no, I'm with you. You preset it
so
that it coincides with your waking up.
There's a welcome doormat that says go away.
Well, that seems counterproductive, but okay.
I would like to put it outside our office. What's a dragon egg? Is it from
theoretically?
Any,
probably, sounds like.
Is it from like Harry Potter or
probably
anything?
Game of Thrones.
It
they
sounds
like
Game
eggs.
Of Thrones. Yeah.
There's a dragon egg cookie jar.
Cool.
Cross Kevin off the list.
There is ice cube molds from Williams Sonoma that are various Star Wars characters.
You've seen the tiki glasses that look like Star Wars characters, right?
Yeah,
those are great.
Good, then get them for yourself.
You don't like
those? I don't want any more Star Wars stuff in our house.
I guess your house is inundated with Star Wars stuff, but if you were going to get Jimmy one more Star Wars thing, these are cocktail glasses, tiki glasses, but they're shaped like Darth Vader and Yoda and C-3PO. They're really cool.
I like tiki drinks. We have a dog named Tiki. Maybe it's a perfect gift.
This is too much, though.
Somebody sent me something that it's a laser light that for Christmas you can set it up on your front lawn, and it has red and green Darth Vader heads. I said, really? I don't want that on my house.
For Christmas?
Well, red and green.
Yeah, but Darth Vader's not really a...
Maybe it's a stormtrooper. Yeah. I think it is Darth and maybe 3PO and R2.
Maybe.
But still, I don't want that. If you're going to love Star Wars, that's fine. That's where he is right now in San Francisco. Fine. Have your Star Wars room. But somebody got him a Darth Vader toaster.
Oh, that's not bad. You don't like that?
No, I don't want it on my counter.
All right.
Put it in the Star Wars room. Go ahead, make your toast up there.
I was looking at a Darth Vader tree topper. Super cool, but very
expensive.
Like an
angel, Kevin?
Yeah.
Does it look like an angel with Darth Vader?
And it, like, lights up. His saber lights up. It was, but just way out of my budget. My budget's, like, $5.
How much was it?
Like, 60 to...
Oh, yeah, that's a lot.
12 years worth of gifts.
Because the Star Wars tree and the Star Wars room...
That should have
That's fine.
But not as your main...
Yeah, I want to wash my hands of this.
No, I get it. I understand.
Because Terry doesn't let you go put toys all over the house.
No. Although, you know what she suggested, and I'm
a
not...
A big boy?
No.
Instead of a Christmas tree?
I keep suggesting that. All right. You know how I have... there's a room. Our sunroom has my snow village in there. And I finished it, and it looks great, and we've had people over. Everybody's saying... And she said, you know what I was thinking you should do? And I go, oh, here it comes. But this is a good idea. I just don't know how to do it. They have these projection things that you can project on your house that look like snowflakes.
What did I just say?
But you said Darth Vader.
Yeah, but
they're
all
more...
different things. Oh, there's this snow village I have. Do you know what a snow village is, Bill? It's like, yes, they project either like snowflakes or different colors.
She wants me to rig one up from the backyard coming into our house so that it looks like there's stars above the village.
That's pretty awesome.
It is. So I don't know if that's doable, but I'm going to look into that because it's like that's like Terry's very patient with me when I have one of these things. She just lets me do it. But that seems like a lot to project a whole room full of stars and stuff. But she's like, yeah, you could rig it up in the back and you could like project it so that it's coming up off the village and stuff. That's a pretty good idea, isn't it?
So it would be inside the house?
I think it would start out outside, although I'd have to look into it because in my head it would go inside somewhere. But I don't know, like when people do that, I've seen people do candy canes or snowflakes or stuff all over their
house. Star Wars characters.
Or Darth Vaders, red and green Darth Vaders, new blue clovers. But I think that that's all set up in front of their house, aimed at their house.
Right, that's what it is. It's a little tiny spotlight.
It's a box, right?
It's a spotlight.
Yeah.
And there's like a lens on it.
Right.
with...
How does it know not to bleed out into your trees and bushes? How does it know to only do your house?
You just point the little spotlight. It's probably the size of maybe a Coke can or something.
Yeah.
And then you just point it where you want it to go. So if you'd pull it back farther if you want your whole house to be awash in lights, or you'd have it up a little closer so it would spotlight a tree or something.
Right. So her idea of putting it in the backyard and coming through the window and making a star field over the village, that's impossible, right? Because I love that idea. I think that sounds really good to me.
Do you have big windows?
Yeah.
That might work then.
Yeah. All right.
You'd have to buy one and try it out. But
wouldn't
keep
it
the
shine on people who'd come in to see the village? Wouldn't there be stars all over them? Or would it just be on our walls?
See, I would think you'd have it inside pointing to the snow village.
Yeah, me too. That makes more sense, right?
Because outside, you're right. If it's shining in the window, people looking at the snow village will be blinded or get laser eye surgery.
I'd screw up their retinas. Nobody would come to our house anymore. Every time we go to their house, our retinas bleed. I don't want that.
Yeah, that would be bad.
We'll figure it out. All right, stay here. We've got more gift ideas from us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, there are various projectors, Bill, that you can get, either a starry night or something that might make it look like it's snowing in your snow village.
My wife's idea was to put, I have a giant snow village. This year it's the North Pole collection. In
Braggart.
Years past, I've done the original snow village, and then one year I did Elk Grove Village, and people love to see that, Wendy. So this year it's the North Pole. And my wife said, hey, do like from behind, do a projector going from our backyard into the room that would put stars all around it. And I like that idea. I like the idea of snow falling even more. If I could make that happen, that'd look cool, wouldn't it? Just a projection of snow falling.
Tell Bill it works. We have one in our front yard and it shines into our living room ceiling.
Mm.
It's really cool.
That would be cool.
And we got it at Lou's Ace Store.
Oh, Lou Manfredini's?
Yeah.
All right.
Our Star-tastic shines through to our inside, and you see the red and green on our walls if the blinds are open, and you don't have to do red or green. You could do white lights.
Oh, I guess you could.
But
Star-tastic, the thing, that's the thing they have at like Walgreens or CVS, right? I just always see the box, but I don't know what it does.
I don't know.
Star-tastic.
I like the name. I'd like to change that to my last name. Hey, Glenn, how's it going?
Good. Your two other notes already emphasized what I was going to say, but there's also one of those can lights that actually looks like it's dropping snowflakes, which I think is what Bill's wife is wanting. And if you shine it through, it does go right through any of the windows, so you can direct it however you want.
Well, that sounds cool. And what do you know what that's called exactly?
Snowtastic.
Snowtastic?
It's the exact same company. It just either generates snowflakes. There's one that does Santa Clauses and candy canes. They've got about four different projection images that you can do, and it just rotates around.
And you've used this? It's a good one?
Yeah, I used it at the house, on my father-in-law's house. We just decorated it up yesterday, so it came out looking really nice.
Good. All right, I'll find that.
It shoots into the living room through his open window.
Good idea. Thank you for sharing that, Glenn. Have a happy holiday. There you go.
Excellent.
We'll find it for you. I'll find it online. I'll call it up on the computer.
Please, it's on the computer. All right, a break, and then Roanna next, Bill and Wendy, WGN.